With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Dadgum freaking interweb tubes, flag stagging, frazzle-acking, no snot flacking. Yeah. Another interesting day in the wonderful world of internet broadcasting, whose last leg is Verizon. Truly, that communications company could screw up a one-car funeral. I kid you not. But the interweb tubes are working. And I hope they continue to do so, but I will not offer you any guarantees thereof. So let's make the best of the situation while we've got a situation to make the best of. What do you say? It's about 4 minutes past the hour. It's Friday, late summer, August, convection current-driven thunderstorms popping up. Yeah, you might get a little wet, so I'll run on up here onto the front porch. Get under the eaves of the porch. Sit back, kick your feet up on the rail. Grab a cold one. Don't drink the water! Do not drink the water! You'll understand why I say that in a minute. But it's Friday on the front porch, on the horn. Anything is open for conversation. Deadly serious politics, social observations, cultural phenomena, silliness and seriousness all have their place. Friday on the front porch, on the horn. And as such, I hope you will bring some of that to the table. I said don't drink the water. Why did I say don't drink the water? Well, if you saw the show post for today that News Ninja Susan kindly maintains, you will note that I have been profoundly affected by a little something that I found over at alternet.org. Granted, it did not originate with Alternet. It is from Mother Jones. And Alternet titled it, The Fiji Phenomenon. It's a human rights and environmental nightmare, so why is it the number one imported bottled water in the U.S.? It's a hell of a headline, really. The subhead is slugged, How did a plastic water bottle imported from a military dictatorship thousands of miles away become the epitome of cool? And whether you go to Mother Jones or whether you go to Alternet, I highly recommend to you this article by Anna Lenzer. It's stunning. When you consider what's being done to the Fijian people over this brand of water that props up, what's the official phrase we're supposed to use? Jesus. A brutal dictatorship. Yeah, that props up a brutal dictatorship and is seen in the hands of everyone who's anyone, from Paris Hilton to P. Diddy to Al Gore. Anna Lenzer, who wrote this, begins the story by telling what happened to her in an internet cafe in the Fijian capital of Suva. She'd been sending emails when a pair of police officers walked into the internet cafe, and they walked up to her and said, "We're going to take you in for questioning about the emails you've been writing." And proceeded to grill her and give her the third degree. Who are you, really? She tried to identify herself. Shut up! I'd hate to see a young lady like you go into a jail full of men. You know what happened to women during the 2000 coup, don't you? Who do you work for? Another water company? Wouldn't be good for you to come here to try to take away Fiji Water's business, wouldn't it? Yeah, there's a brutal military dictatorship in Fiji that is basically the black water for Fiji Water. And of course the Fijian people are as poor as any other poor people on the face of the planet. And this company was started by a person who is a noted liberal. Her name is Linda Resnick, and she's a well-known liberal moneybags who is great pals with Arianna Huffington and Laurie David. She said, "Of course, I know everyone in the world. Every mogul, every movie star." Anna Lenzer's article points out that Manhattan's trendy Carlyle Hotel pours only Fiji water in its dog bowls. Imagine that. A Manhattan hotel pours Fiji water, transported from halfway around the globe, into its dog bowls, while people in Fiji do not have clean water to drink. The SXSW Music Festival featured a Fiji Water Detox Spa. Celebrity chef Nobu Matsuhisa said in 2007, "Each piece of lobster sashimi should be dipped into Fiji water 7 to 10 times." Yeah. And there is a song out there that I looked for and I don't have. Someone among you will recall it, maybe find it. That's kind of an old country western tune about water. Water, water. You know, that one. That's what came to mind when I was reading this. The Fiji water bottles, little square bottles, are referred to as little ambassadors for Fiji. Read this article, either at Mother Jones or at Alternet. And understand that there will never be a banner ad, no matter how desperate for funding we are, there will never be a banner ad on the Horn website for Fiji water or any other water. Because the capitalization of that single most necessary substance for human survival in the planet is not a fitting vehicle for the profit motive. Don't drink the water. Don't drink the water. Meanwhile, just to, you know, just to throw something out there for us to cuss and discuss on a late Friday afternoon while the interweb tubes are still up and working. Oh, Jesus, cross your fingers. This little tidbit from USA Today. Headline: mercury found in all fish caught in U.S.-tested streams. I can almost imagine the Onion headline, fish found in all mercuries surveyed in the United States. No, but this is quite real. Sports fishermen take heed. A government test of fish pulled from nearly 300 streams in the United States. Well, I'm sorry, it's USA Today, so in the USA. They've tried to brand the name of the nation along with their little newspaper. Isn't that clever? A government test of fish pulled from nearly 300 streams in the USA found every one of them contaminated with some level of mercury. And for those of you scoring at home, and for those of you, you know, listening by yourselves, please bear in mind that some mercury is too much mercury in one's water. There is no acceptable level of mercury because it is an additive component within the human structure. And sooner or later, if you are like Lewis Carroll's Mad Hatter, and you start, you know, it's just like drugs. You start off, you're making one little derby here, a little derby there. Pretty soon you're up to Easter bonnets and cricket hats. I don't even know if there are cricket hats. But sooner or later, the mercury does its trick inside you, and you find yourself. And shaking as though you had St. Vitus dance. The study found that 27% of the fish had mercury levels high enough to exceed what the Environmental Protection Agency considers safe for the average fish eater. The Environmental Protection Agency defines as the average fish eater those who eat fish twice a week. 27% of the streams that were surveyed had too much mercury for anyone who eats fish more than once a week. Sweet Jesus, and when you think about the native cultures that populated this continent before the arrival of our white forebears, and you think about the food culture that they had, and the degree to which they were able to rely on fish as a significant source of the protein in their diet. They couldn't do that now. They'd all just be walking around madder than hatters from all the damned mercury. Wonder how the coal industry's going to spin this one. Granted, they just outright deny that there's any such thing as global warming or what is more appropriately termed climate catastrophe that includes elements of what we're seeing now, for instance, seasonal shifting. We're getting the weather now in August that we should have had a month ago in July, and it's been happening that way for years now here in the hills. October will be our August. And it will actually turn to winter sometime around mid-February to early March. No, you know, you think about those cultures that peopled this continent, and there were, we know now, there were more people on the North American and South American continents in 1491 than there were in all of Europe and possibly all of Asia as well and all of Africa. That is how successful the cultures that developed far, far away from European and Asian, mostly white culture, had been. Yeah. And, of course, one of the reasons they were successful is they learned how important water was early on. There were flush toilets in Tenochtitlan that the slack-jawed, amazed, dumber-than-dirt religious fiends and fanatics of the Spanish Empire stared slack-jawed at. Where's the caca going, huh? Poopy, go away. Stupid European. Yeah. Don't drink the water. And don't eat anything that drinks the water. Because corporate America has greater plans for that water. You see, it doesn't matter if there's mercury in the water and in the stream beds. By God, there's a coal company out there that can use it to make liquid coal to secure America's national security future. And we can use every last drop of it that can be pulled from the ground in the Black Mesa area of Arizona to mix with powdered pulverized coal and send in a pipeline to a filthy-ass coal-fired power plant somewhere to the west in California. Because, you know, being human, we wouldn't be needing any water or anything. But then again, the people that live on top of the ground that has the water hundreds of feet beneath it at Black Mesa in Arizona, they're not really human to Peabody Coal anyway. They're just engines. What do you want to bet in the boardroom of Peabody Coal? That at the board meetings there are bottles of Fiji water. Anybody? Any takers? I mean, there's no way to verify this, so nobody's going to lose anything, but come on, what do you want to bet? You know that there is, don't you? Sure you do. Yeah, I do. I wonder how the coal industry is going to spin away from this, because there just aren't a hell of a lot of other sources of mercury in groundwater apart from coal. At least not on a wide enough scale that you could blame mercury in waters in fish that live in waters all over the United States on anything but coal. Coal is the thing that this planet developed as a means of sequestering those toxins that are most profoundly negative for life itself. Not human life, but any life. And of course, being the deadly little apes that we are, we found a way to turn it loose. Oh, yeah, by the way, those liberals that are such good friends with Lori David and Arianna Huffington and so forth, before they got into the Fiji water gig, would you care to guess what they were involved in? They're Canadian. There's a hint for you. They're Canadian. Sorry, Canadians. I mean, I'm not gooning on you. Just they are what... Listen, all evil corporate bastards can't be Americans. It's just statistically impossible. They were into They were into this little company. And you're going to come up out of your chair when you hear this if you don't already know it. They were into this little company called Barrick Gold. You remember Barrick Gold, don't you? Many of the listeners to this program and this network are avid readers of Greg Palast. And Greg Palast detailed at great length the evil doings and goings-on of Barrick Gold, B-A-R-R-I-C-K. I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, that Pat Robertson was invested in Barrick Gold at a time when it was alleged that they were burying human beings alive in Africa. Yes. And by the way, the aquifer that these Fiji water folks control, they got a 99-year lease on. Because in the early 1990s, David Gilmour, who now owns... it wasn't the Resnicks. It's David Gilmour who owns former co-founder of Barrick Gold. David Gilmour, not of Pink Floyd fame. He got wind in the early 1990s of a study done by the Fijian government and found that Fiji had an aquifer more than 17 miles long near the main island's north coast and got a 99-year lease on it. That's where Fiji water comes from. And Gilmour then put Fiji water up for sale in 2004, where it was purchased by the Resnicks. They made their money on a company called Teleflora and something else called the Franklin Mint. They are also the driving force behind the Palm Wonderful brand of pomegranate juice. They also own a pesticide company. They have agricultural water subsidies totaling more than $1.5 million. And they have massive holdings in almond, pistachio, and pomegranates in California. They control one of the single largest underground water reservoirs in the nation, namely, for those of you in California, you'll recognize this, the Kern Water Bank on the edge of the California Central Valley. They control that. When I think about water just going down drains, because everybody's had a water leak here and there, and the fact that we pay for it, and the fact that there's really not nearly as much of it as we need to support the human population. There are people dying of thirst on this planet today, okay? Let's just be plain. Some of those people dying for want of clean, potable water happen to live in the nation of Fiji. And yet water, if you asked an American corporatist whether water is a human right, no, it's something we make a profit off of, hell. Because that's the way that corporate America thinks. Oh, there's a ton to go into this evening. We are going to have such fun. There's a new PR campaign out from the filthy coal industry. I suppose they won't address the water issue. It's going to be kind of hard for them to. After all, as this article in USA Today says, The findings in wild-caught fish underscore how widespread mercury contamination in the nation's waterways has become. Previous research has found levels of concern in ocean and lake fish. Quote, this science sends a clear message. Science? I don't need no science. We got Jesus. This science sends a clear message that our country must continue to confront pollution, restore our nation's waterways, and protect the public from potential health dangers, Interior Secretary Ken Salazar said in a statement. Ken Salazar. Sorry. Most mercury in water, says the article, most mercury in water comes from particles from the atmosphere, the EPA says, fed largely by coal-fired power plants, trash burning, and concrete plants nationally and internationally. You'll notice that coal-fired power plants came first. There's a reason for that. It's in order. The United States Geological Study, the United States Geological Survey study that produced the data for this report took place in 291 streams in the United States from 1998 to 2005. So, you ain't safe. By the way, the highest mercury levels were found in largemouth, smallmouth, and spotted bass. The lowest were found in brown rainbow cutthroat trout and channel cats. But they all had mercury in them. And again, let me reiterate, there's no good amount of mercury. You can put too much salt on your fried catfish and it'll ruin your fried catfish, but a little salt is often salutary. But there is no salutary level of mercury in channel catfish. Just to make that abundantly clear. No, we have the beginnings, I think, of a fantastic Front Porch Friday. I hope you will saunter on up. Grab yourself a rocking chair. Smoke them if you got them. Drink them if you want them. And share what's going on inside your mind for this this Friday. Feels kind of odd to do two shows and just be done with the week. But I'm just glad to be back. Meanwhile, we got a little something going on this weekend that I need to tell you about. Do please tune in to the horn long about, and I'm not guaranteeing a hard start, you know. Oh, 159.58, 159.59, 2 o'clock, go! But long about 2 o'clock Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time in Charleston, West Virginia, is a kickoff concert for Still Moving Mountains, The Journey Home. Yours truly will be emceeing and streaming same to the entire thirsty planet. I hope you will tune in. 2 p.m. right there on the headonradionetwork.com stream. The kickoff concert from the state capitol grounds of West Virginia, the Still Moving Mountains, The Journey Home. So here we are, 30 minutes into the Friday night show. I certainly hope you're not going to turn this into another one of those darn filibobsters. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn. It's Friday on the front porch. Light 'em up.
All day I face the barren waste without the taste of water. Cool water. Old Dan and I with throats burned dry and souls that cry for water. Cool, clear water. The nights are cool and I'm a fool. Each star's a pool of water. Cool water. And
moving band. Don't you listen to him, Dan. He's a devil, not a man. And he spreads the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for you and me? Water. The shadows sway and seem to say, tonight we pray for water, cool water. And way up there he'll hear our prayer and show us where there's water. Dan, don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man. And he spreads the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for you and me? Water.
Baby, when the river runs.
It's a horn double shot for this Front Porch Friday. Dire Straits, Water of Love, and before that, Marty Robbins and Cool Water. Yeah, pardon the theming and pardon the double shot, but the fact of the matter is, I was waiting to see if the interweb tubes were gonna hold up. We're having some issues. Yeah, no kidding. So, anyway, that's why the double shot. Plus, you know, the fact of the matter is, I don't need an excuse to play anything by Mark Knopfler. I just don't. Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah, this... I couldn't resist. This is a little something from the Dune soundtrack that I know at least a couple of you are going, Bob, you devil! Jessica Changes Water. But anyway, that's why that was. For the musically challenged among us, the Dire Straits song, that was a dobro, right? A dobro over what sounded to me to be either a samba or a bossa nova beat. Work with me here. I'm not that musically literate. I just know what sounds good inside my ear holes. So, but God. I was just sitting here just bouncing listening to that. Oh, man. And many thanks for the provision of the Marty Robbins tune as well. Let's look. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com. Learn it, know it, use it. It's Front Porch Friday. And that is for all of us, not just to me to sit here and babble into the Ethernet. Okay? So light them up. We had lights lit at the end of the program last night. So if you didn't get in last night, you will get in tonight. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Ah, good, good, good. Hi, Bob. This is Chris Fagan from Malala, Oregon. I sent you... the book, Weston Price, Nutrition and Physical...
Yes, and it is proving fascinating.
Okay, cool. Well, right now I'm, you know, this healthcare thing, that the biggest thing on my mind is that because it's true that corporations, as medical corporations, make money by denying healthcare, that seems like they also do everything they can to deny any kind of information, any kind of research that would hurt them. Let's say vitamin E curing people in the 50s with the Shoot Brothers up in Canada, 50,000 people cured with vitamin E. But the big deal is, if we're going to have a for-profit, we have to have a for-knowledge. We're sick because we don't understand what's going on. The rest of the world is...
Oh, I think you're absolutely right, Chris. We're sick because we don't understand, and we're sick because we don't... We don't understand a lot of things. We don't understand our bodies. We don't understand the toxic, poisoned place in which we live that the corporate world has created for us.
Well, that might be true, except if they've already shown you by experiments in the 40s, 50s, 60s that when you hit these levels, cancers go up, and the corporations have known about this and are allowed to bury it. this information is life-threatening and life-saving if you find out that, hey, you shouldn't have been eating trans fats all your life because they knew 20 years ago it was deadly. And it caused problems 20 years after the time of ingestion.
You know what? That is, there is absolute truth in what you say, Chris, because my mother and her brother got very much into homeopathy and into not only that, but more particularly nutrition, vitamins, minerals as well, back when I was a little kid, and this would be the 70s. And even back then, reading books by people like Adele Davis, they knew that the trans fats and hydrogenated this and partially hydrogenated that were god awful for you. And so the information has been out there.
But then it's not brought up anywhere on in the idea of stopping people from being sick. I mean, the idea that we're going to keep everybody knowing that with these statistics and these amounts that 3/4 of all the people are going to die of a deadly disease, and to say that's okay, but they need care while they're dying of this deadly disease, rather than, hey, why don't you outlaw or cut back on sugar? Let's say that instead of eating 80 pounds of sugar per year, if you want health care, you've got to cut it back to 30. You also have to do, let's say, 30 minutes a day, 4 times a week of cardiovascular. It can be all voluntary. We don't care. We can ask you. Something that gets your heart going, something, quit, you know, feeding you the bad stuff that your body has to try to process and feed you the good stuff that we know works better.
And I think that is at least partially mirrored in the discussions among some of the more enlightened among us when we talk about preventative care as opposed to palliative care or curative care.
Well, yeah, but even preventative care, if I ask somebody, how much cod liver oil do you take? How much vitamin A and E and D and E? It's like, how much? And they go, what? I ask my doctor, I say 400 a day. He goes, that's too much. I go, where do you get your information? Who are you reading? And it's like he has no answer. None whatsoever but to tell me amount that is still below the amount that healthy people took according to the research. You're trying to tell people to listen to I don't want to insult people, but it's like,
well, no, I mean, the fact of the matter is, Chris, the nutritional portion of medical education is roughly equivalent to the amount of education that a new recruit gets in boot camp about the Nuremberg laws. You know, somewhere right after you've just gotten in from a 20 mile hike and right before chow, in that little 15-minute, oh, by the way, you don't have to obey an illegal order, or in medical school, and today is your unit on nutrition. You know, Andrew Weil has done has been railing about this for years now.
Mm-hmm.
The absence of nutritional education among physicians. But the thing is, oh wow, what an onion you have just unpeeled here, or just peeled. The American Medical Association has an absolute stranglehold on medical education in this country. We have to start there. We talk about a shortage of doctors in this country. It is an artificial shortage created and maintained by the American Medical Association, and that's no conspiracy theory or grand scheme. The American Medical Association will tell you that to be true.
Well, it's all part of the, I mean, FDA's in with it, too. I mean, to look at soybean. Not a lot of good I can read on it at all, except it's in everything. Try to find mayonnaise that's not made out of soybean oil.
True.
You can't do it. And it's like your great-grandparents, they never made mayonnaise. They'd make their own, but it was never out of that, you know, until they figured out how to, you know, crack it and squeeze it out of that with nasty processes. Could they give you soybean oil?
Yeah, well, the same thing goes for high fructose corn syrup.
Or canola oil.
Yeah, because, you know, multi-great grandma and grandpa, they made plenty of sorghums for sweetener, you know, because sorghum will grow around here, and they made sorghum syrup, but they never tried to make any high fructose corn sweetener out of their corn crop. because that was going for meal and grits and silage for their animals. And you can't do it without complex fracturing processes that are far more than
leave carcinogens in the product that you get to take.
Well, there you go. And while we're talking about mercury this evening, plenty of mercury in high fructose corn syrup, it turns out.
Oh, my goodness. And high fructose corn syrup, according to Tom Hartman, they said they did a report that it makes your body want to keep eating, doesn't shut it down.
I wouldn't be surprised at all to know that's true. When I read Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma some years back, which proved to be just a seminal, you know, life-changing event, and he was talking about the fact that there was more security around these high fructose corn syrup fracking operations than there are around some nuclear plants, then I knew that there was probably something evil going on in there.
Well, the whole structure's evil. We've got the sickest country on the planet for, you know, supposedly being the healthiest. You know, have the best choice of stuff to eat, and three-quarters of it is not healthy. And they wonder what's going on, and it's like, go see your doctor, and they're clueless. I know they really try, but as soon as you find out who's the healer. If you read a good book and you tell it to a doctor, and it's like, here's the research was done, and they say, well, yeah, that's nice, and then they don't really want to tell anybody about it, they're really not a healer. You know, they're out for the money.
Well, that's like while I was gone, I really hated missing it, Chris, but while I was gone, our little local group here, the Anstead Historic Preservation Council, hosted a Return to Natural Healing seminar.
Ooh.
We had individuals in who know that topic. My wife Agnes and my daughter Laura went and were just blown away by it. And, you know, they just taught them some basic ground level stuff, like a beverage that consists of some grape juice, some vinegar, and a little local raw honey mixed into it as a maintenance preventative, you know, loaded with antioxidants and yada, yada, yada. And we've got the recipe, and I'm going to start downing a little bit of that every day.
I'm going to just finish up with one more thing before I go. They had a special that we recorded. It had to do with diabetes, and the lady was taking shots and doing all the drugs for diabetes, and she found out a retreat that she could go to. Within a week, using a total raw food diet of, you know, drink this and eat the salads and all the different kinds of things they had and all the sprouts, she was off all drugs in a week. From shots and all drugs, and at the end of the month, she was totally stable in all aspects and going home.
It's not surprising. You know, the scientist was, well, you know, that's anecdotal. But you get it in enough people, then it transforms from anecdotal to statistically significant.
Well, how do we stir up this America that is so passionate about so many things they're like, you wave your hands in front of their eyes and you wonder what's going on, what's light inside. They say these things that are incoherent sometimes, and you want to wake them up to say, hey, you're hurting yourself. And, or at least, you know, do you listen to the educated people? Do you listen to the research? Do you, you know, anyway, I just want to try to help people.
Oh, I know you do, Chris, and I appreciate it, and I'm continuing to go through the book, and it just blows me away.
Well, yeah, I want to get, like, in a week or two, just go over chapter, you know, up to chapter one, chapter two, when they start going into the differences of the primitive diets and the modern diets, and do chapter by chapter, and we can do one chapter at a week, and be able to glean what we think is really important about it and have something to discuss, because the world doesn't know about this man or anything that he's done. And without it, all they have to do is go, you know, with Fox News, you know, fair and balanced, dumb and dumber. anyway, love you. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, great. Thanks, Chris. Good hearing from you. Have a wonderful weekend.
All right.
Bye. I think an extended discussion along those lines would probably be merited. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on directly, 304-658-3333. Let's see what's happened. Nope. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, this is Joe from Bremerton, Washington. heard about your show from Mike Malloy, and I've been listening ever since.
Oh, well, thanks, Joe.
Yeah. You might notice I've written to you a few times as the foxhole atheist.
I thought you might be the foxhole atheist.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to see what take, because I'm a little lighthearted to start with. But I have a Congressman, Norm Dix, up in my district, or my state here, and I've had the conclusion that he's got to be Dick Cheney.
And you reached that how?
Well, he never talks to his constituents. He only meets with rich hospital CEOs and such, and he never puts his name on any legislation. Kind of works from the shadows, just like Dick Cheney does.
That is that's certainly apropos of Cheney. Maybe I don't know. Maybe he's a member of the Cheney cabal or some such.
Well, he's supposed to be. Well, it really ticks me off because he's supposed to be a Democrat, and he's not.
That's something that plagues us from Washington to Florida and from California to Maine. Howard Dean alluded to that some several years ago now when he stood up and said, I am a member of the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. And I think that's one of the things that's really important, Joe, is that we find those guys and women. We've got to find the real Democrats because dinos are roaming the land right now.
And it's hard to get them out of office. I campaigned against him last election season, and we shaved 6% off of his margin, but, it's hard.
Yeah, and at the end of the day in November, if you've got more than the other guys got, it all goes into the W column, and then he can forget about you for another 2 years. But it is so important, and it's something that is not a fully formed movement, but it has a substantial basis in reality at this point. This idea of fielding candidates in the primaries, because incumbents have these little war chests, and they hate to spend money on primaries.
Right. Well, he refused to even do a debate during the primaries. And since I actually worked with a guy running against him, I found out the financial information. Norm Dix spent $300,000 on his campaign opposed to our $30,000 campaign. So that shows you how much money power they got.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, they have money power coming out the gazoo. And it makes for a hell of a tough hill to climb.
Yeah.
The nice thing is that even with all of that money, if you can pull together any kind of a little network of folks and do the door-to-door thing, that is this, ask anybody about organizing, they will tell you door-to-door is more effective than any amount of, you name it, TV ads, newspaper ads, radio ads, signs in yards, direct mailing, phone banking, door-to-door wins. And if you can do if you can pull together enough of an organization to do a ton of door-to-door, then you can, even if you don't win in the primary, you can still put a significant enough hurtin' on the incumbent to make him understand that there's a lot of discontent with his service out there.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do the door-to-door this next time to try to get him out of there. Yeah, I'm working hard on getting Norm Dix so we can get a real Democrat.
Well, that's the other trick, is finding the real Democrat.
Yeah, well, I found that. That one kind of just popped into my lap. As soon as I found the guy, I started working hard for him.
Is he going to run again?
I hope so. He hasn't said he's still trying to decide. I don't know if his website's still up. It's Paul Richmond. And he's in journalism, and he's actually done some TV stuff too. So,
well, I noticed an example of the same kind of problem that you're describing, Joe, here in West Virginia today. The chair of the Mingo County Young Democrats or some such is out there shilling for this thing that Big Coal is going to be doing. That is, directly opposed to Democratic Party policy, Democratic Party politics, opposed to health care reform, opposed to any reform of the coal industry. And he's out there, and this kid's a state-level Democrat, and he's out there shilling for the other side. You know, Lord God, there is no end of what corporate America can and will not try to corrupt.
Right, and then I'm in a relatively small town, 50,000 people, so well, I consider it a small town. Our local Democratic Party is all for the incumbent and won't listen to anybody else.
Oh no, that's not at all surprising. Any sort of challenge of an incumbent is going to be an uphill struggle of monumental proportions. The thing is, though, if you can oust the incumbent, then you'll get all of that. And you may not believe it, but Bremerton holds a warm place in my heart simply because it was a place that my father loved.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because of his
station up here?
That was home port for USS Essex. Or near it, and he spent considerable time in Bremerton.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we got Seattle across the water, so that's always nice too.
Right. I've even got some old black and white brownie snapshots of him standing on the flight deck of Essex when she was in port there.
Oh, cool. Well, that's about all I had to say for the day. So I'll let you go, I guess.
All right. Well, thanks, Joe. I enjoy your emails, and I look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Calling from Bremerton, Washington, our buddy Joe, the foxhole atheist. You've heard his emails before. Yeah, I every now and then I get those old photographs, those old photo albums out, and keeping memories alive, you know. But I grew up hearing about Bremerton, Washington. And what I mentioned just a minute ago, the business about the young Democrat from Mingo County, West Virginia, I got from our friend Clem Gattata, who is a blogger who I had the pleasure of meeting at Netroots Nation. And look up Clem. If you're on Facebook, look him up there, and maybe he'll add you to his notes when he puts out stories. But this was just horrifying. This hate fest that they're going to have in Logan County, West Virginia, Labor Day weekend, is nothing if not sickening. Ted Nugent, the Sean Hannity. Some washed-up country acts, including Hank Williams Jr. And it is going to be the nearest thing to a corporate Klan rally that has ever been seen in this state. And they've got the nerve to bill this as a Friends of America rally, if you can imagine. Friends of America, my left hind foot. My ancestors have been bleeding and dying for this country for damn near 200 years, if not more. You know, we don't need some filth, feces-encrusted draft dodger like Ted Nugent to tell us how to be friends of America. Because, see, a bunch of us all over this country, we're already blood kin now, aren't we? Friends of America, my ass. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello? All right, we'll try that line again in a little bit. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, dear, are we having to... Oh, no, please... Please, please, not troubles with the interweb tubes. But that may well be the case. We may have interweb tube problems. Okay, maybe this person's trying to call back in again. I don't know. We'll just see what happens. Have to let it get into the system, as it were. And let's see here. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Cassie.
Well, hey, Cassie.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. I trust you are as well.
Yeah, I called a minute ago, and I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me.
Oh, Lord.
but that's okay. I called back.
Well, you did call back, and it worked this time. It's just that it's supposed to work every time, you see.
Right. Well, yeah. So can I change the topic completely? Because, like, it's Front Porch Friday.
It certainly is, and you certainly may.
Okay. I want to talk about the things that are getting cut in the budgets that nobody knows are being cut in the budgets.
Okay.
Like the state budget. So, you know, my mom has been in jail for almost 8 years.
Yes.
She's been in jail for 7 years on an 11-year sentence.
Okay.
Almost 8 years. So she's supposed to be on parole.
But?
She's supposed to be transferred to a halfway house.
Right.
That has the kind of treatment that she needs and to help her get back into regular life after being in prison for 7 years. But there aren't any. And there's no funding for them. And there's like more than a year's waiting list. So instead, the state that can't afford to send her to the right kind of program that the judge said she should be in, instead is sending her to a private prison that they're probably paying five times as much to send her to, and she's not even supposed to be in prison after next Wednesday.
Wow.
But that's where they're sending her.
But, you know, that's...
Because that contract already exists.
Yeah, that's typical. That's typical thinking, as typical institutional thinking, for a state or a nation that has a punishment fetish.
Well, if they were sending her to a private prison because it had the kind of drug treatment and psychology treatment that she needs, then I would think that it's an okay thing, maybe even a good thing. But I don't think it is. I mean, I've looked up some stuff on it online, and I've looked up things that people have said about this particular prison, and it doesn't seem to have a lot of those services.
I'm sure that it doesn't, but if you want to do research that will have real telling effects on your attempt to understand why this happened to your mother, what you want to find out is, what is the corporation's name that runs that prison? Once you know that, you do a little research on that corporation and find out which corporations control it. Or maybe it's just freestanding and it's not controlled by it's not a captive of a higher corporation. In either result...
I think this is the ones that Dick Cheney owns, the ones in South Texas.
Might be.
All the ones in South Texas.
Might be, but what you do after you know the name of the corporation is you go to campaign contribution disclosure lists and you find out how much money they gave to Rick Perry, your governor. And then you will understand why your mother is not going to a halfway house, but instead is going to a private prison to serve out the remainder of her term.
Isn't it illegal, though, if the judge said that she should be in a halfway house? Isn't it illegal for them to keep her in prison past Wednesday?
Well, first you have to find the judge's order where he says it. And
okay.
then someone would have to hail the State Department of Corrections into court on a contempt petition, at least the way I understand it. And you would have to have someone willing to do that. Your mother is in a fragile position. You know, the most she could probably do would be to pursue habeas corpus relief, which
right.
would probably be rejected out of hand.
I'm not 18 and my brother's not in the country.
Right. But, I mean, technically you would have to find some probably public defender type or legal aid type or prisoner's rights organization who would file on her behalf if, indeed, the language is that stark inside the judge's order, stark enough to present a colorable claim because, you know, it's in these sorts of circumstances, it's rather usual when a judge sees something like this happening, rather than making a harsher penalty than what the judge ordered, the judge will say, then turn them loose.
But that's not good either.
Right. Because that's throwing her out of the frying pan and into the fire. She needs support, sure. But the sad fact of the matter is, no one associated with this issue has sufficient power to compel the state to do what the state should be doing. You know, because the punishment industry, as you well know, Cassie, because you've spent so much time studying it, the punishment industry is one of the greatest growth industries in this country.
Yeah.
And that's sick and twisted enough for probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 shows.
We have more than 1% of our population in jail.
You're right.
Or on parole or on probation.
Correct.
That is more than any other country except for China.
Yes. And, you know, there's no good answer to that because the United States of America, for all its failings, does not have that much higher a percentage of bad people. You know, on the other hand, however, I had an article this week. It was out of the Washington Post, and it was by two gentlemen by the name of Peter Moskus and Stanford Neil Franklin, both of whom are academics now. One's a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and the other is a 32-year law enforcement veteran. They were both Baltimore City police officers. And in this op-ed in Monday's Washington Post, the headline is, "It's Time to Legalize Drugs." And one of the things that they say is that after 4 years of witnessing ineffectiveness of drug policies and the disproportionate impact the drug war has on young black men, only after those 4 years have we and other police officers begun to question the system. And toward the end, they say, "We simply urge the federal government to retreat. Let cities and states, and while we're at it, other countries, decide their own drug policies. Many would continue prohibition, but some would try something new. California and its medical marijuana dispensaries provide a good working example, warts and all, that legalized drug distribution does not cause the sky to fall." And then they end by saying, "Without the drug war, America's most decimated neighborhoods would have a chance to recover. Working people could sit on stoops. Misguided youths wouldn't look up to criminals as role models. Our overflowing prisons could hold real criminals. And most important to us, more police officers wouldn't have to die."
Yeah.
And because...
But they still need to have treatment.
Sure. I mean, they absolutely do.
Whether legal or illegal, they need to have more treatment options, and they need to have treatment as an alternative to a lot of the prisoners. You know, and they need to deal with all of the prisoners who are already serving.
Yes. I agree 100%. But that isn't out there right now. You know, and the treatment issue applies to everything.
They want to spend money on building prisons, but they don't want to spend money on addicts.
Right, because there's money to be had in building prisons. There is corporate growth and interest on interest on bonds and stock dividends and all kinds of fun stuff in prison building. All you get with a treatment program is one more healthy human being. It's really hard for a corporation to make a buck on that.
Right. And when they employ, prison workers in California are one of the biggest unions, one of the most active unions.
Yes.
And when they build the private prisons, there's less training, but there's also a lot less union, a lot less unionization in the private prison.
Sure. They don't want a union.
A lot less.
So, you know, it is a Gordian knot of a problem, Cassie. And frankly, sad to say, but you're learning it firsthand. And I, you know, and I can't tell you how sad it makes me that you're having to.
I'll stay with secondhand.
Well, I mean, you're learning it firsthand in terms of someone you know and love being in that system.
Yeah.
But it's all, but you know, don't think for an instant that that it would be any better if your mother was in Mississippi or Alabama or Tennessee or California. It is, you know, there are individual state issues, but the overarching problem is an institutional one that that transcends the state lines. So, do you know where she's? Do you know where she's going? You do. And
I can't say it on air. Oh
no! I don't want you to.
I can email you stuff.
Well, I'm just curious to know. I mean, you've done some research. Since they don't have this for her and she's been paroled, does this mean she's going to spend the rest of the term in the private prison until something opens up in a halfway house?
I think so. Yeah, they're moving her to the private prison.
That's sickening. No offense, but that is just sickening.
I agree.
Because at this point, your mom is being used as a profit vehicle for that private corporation.
Yeah.
And
she's not getting anything. I mean, if, like I said before, if she was going to a private prison and getting the kind of treatment that she needs to get, then it would be a different story. But I don't think she's going to get anything.
No, because
where she is now, it's all of the drug treatment and all of that stuff has all been by volunteers. So sometimes they come and sometimes they don't. There's
right.
been no program.
And of course, it's a fairly clear model for how to make warehousing human beings profitable. And you do it, Cassie, by shorting on the things that human beings need and going long on stock dividends.
Did you read the story about prisons? I think it was about, I don't remember where the story was, but it was somewhere in the United States where they've decided to give the prisoners less food and less calories. That's their cost cutting measure.
Yes, and that's what I meant in this context. You know, we have a running gag here in our family, in the grocery store, there's a brand of singles cheese slices that don't have any cheese in them. They're just made out of vegetable oil with some yellow food coloring and cheese flavoring. And they're always really, really cheap. And it's referred to in this family as prison cheese. Because that's what people get in these circumstances. They short, and it's nothing new that a prison shorts on food. Because if you keep, first of all, you have inmates who are largely sedentary because exercise facilities are A, expensive, and B, often used as a springboard for the prison culture itself and the strongest versus the weakest and that kind of thing. And secondly, if you cut calories to your prison,
when we need to have more minutes of PE every week or whatever, they make us run around the track.
Right. But if you cut calories to your inmate population, you thereby weaken them, making it more difficult for them to make any trouble, quote unquote.
But all right, this question may not sound quite right, but you know that food pyramid thing?
Yeah.
That they teach us in middle school?
Right.
Right. Shouldn't school lunches and prison lunches and all of the government-run institutional lunches have to have at least as much fruit and vegetables as is on there?
If the people inside those two institutions are deemed fully human, yes. But in the case of school lunches, if you recall the story from a year or so ago, we know that the school lunch program was sent foods that were prepared out of downer cattle that may have been mad cow infested. But it was cooked to 100 and whatever degrees Fahrenheit during the canning process and therefore said to be safe. And it was sent as beef crumbles and tacos and frozen pizzas to school lunch programs around the country, which are largely funded as a function of feeding poor kids. So there's your not-quite-human angle on that. And we know that by virtue of the fact that that American law says that prison inmate populations are civil incompetents, literally wards of the state, just like a mentally challenged person is, that they don't have the same rights and they don't have the same requirements of treatment, we know that they're not fully human either.
Well,
so no food pyramid for them, thank you very much. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yes. Well, I have a lot more rights, and I'm also a ward of the state. I'm a ward of the state while my brother, you know.
Yeah.
He went to Afghanistan and all that.
Right.
And actually, since 2 weeks before that. But anyway, but I have a guardian ad litem whose job it is to make sure that my needs are being cared for. And if I get denied food, I can pick up the phone and call her.
Yes, you can.
Or if, I mean, you know, that's not happening. I'm staying with a great family and...
Right, but you have...
There's not enough chocolate, but there's enough of everything else.
Well, you know, come on, you're a girl. There's never going to be enough chocolate, all right? I mean, let's just face it. But seriously, you...
We've got four girls in this house right now.
There should just be a daily delivery. You know, the guy just comes up with a box of chocolate, dry, big box of chocolate, puts it on the front stoop, rings the doorbell, and runs. I mean, I remember.
I remember before it melts.
Yeah, I remember when Agnes was pregnant. She had her two cravings were chocolate and shrimp, not necessarily together, but chocolate and shrimp. Well, like I said, not together.
Okay. Huh?
But, you know, I'd just sort of open the door and throw it in and close the door and wait outside for 30 minutes. And then just poke my head in the door and see if everything was safe. But, no, but in all seriousness, Cassie, you have that advocate.
Yeah.
And that advocate may have 5 or 6 or maybe 50 other kids for whom she is advocating and serving as a guardian ad litem. Imagine an entire prison population served by one or two people. The system is this.
Pick up the phone and call them.
And you can't pick up. They can't. No. And the system.
I mean, like I, you know.
The system is designed.
I have friends with phones. I have.
Right. But the system is
designed to memorize a phone number.
Right, but Cassie, what I'm trying to get across here is the system is designed to fail. Just like the regulatory system for West Virginia's Department of Environmental Protection is designed to fail. Just like any regulatory body is designed to fail. You know, health insurance corporations are designed to deny coverage to people who desperately need it. Wall Street banking firms are designed to take money from people and never have to give it back. This is inbuilt design failure by intent. Does that make any sense?
It does. It does. But do you think that the reason they didn't fund the halfway houses and the treatment centers is because of the private prisons?
Yes, that's what I'm telling you.
Why don't they just have halfway houses instead?
Because they're more expensive to run. It is easier to warehouse a human being than it is to prepare a human being for re-entry into society.
And these people don't care about society anyway because they live in gated communities and don't have...
Some of them, that's absolutely true. You know, there was, I forget what it was. There was a science fiction movie out where... maybe it was Judge Dredd or something, I don't know. But somebody transgressed the law and they were sent to prison. And when they were sent to prison, they were just put into suspended animation for X amount of time. And then they were reawakened at the end of the term. That's what we're talking. We are talking about, I mean, that is an expanded.
But America wouldn't like that because there's not enough punishment.
I don't know, because it's
you're missing time, but it doesn't hurt.
But it cuts down on the labor of guarding them, and it still maximizes the profits because they have to be there to wake up. And meanwhile, you're paying out stock dividends, paying out stock dividends, paying out stock dividends. And you're putting very, very, very minimal amounts of corporate capital into the actual physical plant. You know, that's a broad painting of what warehousing human beings is. But every prison in the United States is, to one degree or another, simply a matter of making a warehouse for human beings. Some get warehoused forever. Some get warehoused for not less than one nor more than 3 years. Some get warehoused for a determinate sentence of 11 years. But there is no situation under which those human beings are not warehoused. Rehabilitation has so little a part to play in our prison structure that it's barely worth mentioning anymore. I don't remember if you remember our conversation some time back with the activist Loretta Nall from Alabama, but her famous story of the prison panty debacle. When she showed up to visit her brother at a prison in Alabama and was denied access to her brother because she was not wearing underwear.
Wow.
You know, at first it's like, damn, this is funny. But then after a minute you go, wait, what? You know, how is that?
Wearing something though, right? Skirt or pants or something.
Sure. Sure. But again, what has that got to do? I mean, if you're bringing in a birthday cake with a file in it, okay, I understand. It's a prison. You don't get birthday cakes with files in them.
They didn't let me bring a hairbrush when I was like 12 or 13 when I went to visit her. And they made us put it back in the car. They wouldn't let me bring it in because I was going to have my mom... brush my hair and do my hair. And they wouldn't let me bring it.
Mercy. Well, you know, probably because there's some prisoner out in the facility who, if he got that hairbrush into his possession, would sit there and quietly work on filing it down against the concrete floor until he had a pretty nice razor-sharp shiv.
But we would bring it back out. I mean, they were watching the whole time.
I know. That's how ridiculous this all is. You know, upwards of 50% of the prison population is not in need of that level of punishment? And, you know, of course, the funny thing is, if you commit the right kind of crime, you're not going to wind up in a place like your mom's in. And like so many Americans are in.
But you're going to be Carl Rove and you get to go on TV and write newspaper articles.
Charles Colson is one of the darlings of the right-wing industry. And, you know, he's a member of the religion industry and he found Jesus in prison. And but the prison he went to over Watergate was nothing like anything that goes on in Angola, Louisiana, or Mount Olive, West Virginia, or wherever the state pen is in any given state. You know, it's like a little dormitory with a barbed wire fence around it. But that's because they committed the right kind of crimes. And that's why those sorts of prisons are referred to as club-fed.
Well, the only people my mom was ever dangerous to are the people that she didn't ever get charged with hurting. And that's me and my brother. We're the only people she was dangerous to.
What a statement. What a statement.
I mean, the drugs weren't dangerous.
No. She ran afoul of the.
To her body, maybe, but they weren't like.
Yes, precisely. She ran afoul of the prohibition. The drugs are not what technically created her problem. Rather, the prohibition was.
And she wouldn't tell them who her dealer was. I mean.
And that's because she wanted to continue living when she got to the outside again.
Yeah.
And probably at that point she was afraid for you and your brother's well-being as well. Because people say things like, we know where your children are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, there you go. And her punishment for that was to wind up where she is now.
And with a much longer sentence.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the specifics of the charge or the amounts or anything like that, but that's inordinately harsh. But that's also typical of Texas.
Right, but they offered her a deal if she would testify against the people who were importing the drugs. And she wouldn't. She wouldn't testify against them.
Mercy.
But she also didn't think she'd get convicted.
Well, yeah, and that was...
Yeah.
In Texas, you're not going to get convicted. Yeah, you're on drugs when you think like that. I mean, that's the drugs thinking. Tough.
So,
tough.
Anyway.
Well, dude, I hope you will.
I want to say one more thing.
Okay, just real quick. I hope you will do a little bit of research and follow the money. Because in situations like this, when you do follow the money, that's when you find the answers, Cassie.
It's always about money. Bristol Palin's boyfriend?
Yes, Levi Johnson.
Boyfriend? Right, the not boyfriend?
Yeah.
Levi Johnston, his mother got sentenced this week.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she pleaded guilty and she's going away for 3 years.
Possession with intent to deliver?
Yeah, somebody was surprised that it wasn't meth. It turned out to be something else. Like, they were expecting meth and it turned out...
Downers.
It turned out to be... a prescription medicine that she was getting, in a liquid form for injecting.
Yeah, it was some sort of liquid downer, wasn't it?
I don't.
You know, a liquid opiate, sure. Like a liquid Demerol or a liquid.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a painkiller thing. So she got sentenced to 3 years. So he's 18, or he's 19 now. But he has a sister who's younger, and there's nothing in any of the news about where she is or who's taking care of her or if anybody's taking care of her or if she was at the sentencing, which I thought was really weird that she would be at the hearing. But...
Well, why do you think it weird?
Well, if she's younger than Levi and he's just 19, then she's probably not 18 yet.
Okay.
And here they won't let you go to a sentencing. I mean, it didn't say whether she was, like, with a family member or if she just went. I don't know. Here they won't let you go alone.
Okay, won't let you, okay.
You have to.
Kind of like a, wow, Justice is like an R-rated movie.
Right. Right. So, but I thought it was interesting. I haven't seen any, you know, I've seen a few news articles and I've seen a few blog posts about the fact that she pled guilty. But is it pled or pleaded? Because I've seen, I thought it was pled, but...
No, pleaded.
The
pleaded.
AP News had pleaded.
Pleaded.
Oh, okay. I don't know where I got
Well, and while we're on that little style point, since you are an aspiring journalist, I trust that in your adult as you grow up and become a professional, if there are professional journalists left by then, you will never be caught writing the phrase "he was found innocent" by a jury. That's one of those little ones out there that I see, and it just drives me batty.
Because we have not guilty and guilty.
Right, there's no such thing as being found innocent.
Or guilty for reasons of insanity or whatever. But
right.
Not innocent.
Right. And the contrary of that is...
Rose keeps saying that he got found not guilty, or he got found innocent by whatever.
And that's because he is a master manipulator of language. Or when someone is charged with something and is arraigned, and you will hear the very bad reporter say, "He pleaded innocent today." Uh-uh. He either pleaded not guilty or guilty or nolo contendere. Or not guilty by reason of insanity.
Right.
So just remember that one, and... when I'm a doddering old fool, and you're a famous investigative journalist, because I'm a doddering middle-aged fool right now, but when I'm a doddering old fool gnawing away at my creamed corn and oatmeal, I will not see your byline and see that you have written that somebody pleaded innocent or was found innocent and thereby have a stroke and fall over in my oatmeal. You can do that for me, right, Cassie?
I promise.
Okay, thank you.
And I promise that your cream corn won't be cream corn syrup.
Oh, no, I'm sure by then it'll probably be run through a chip in my arm or something. And it'll be a liquid that has cyber-creamed corn qualities to it. And I'll be, and see, now that there's...
And you
there's
like
a,
it.
Yeah, and I'll like it, because I won't have brains enough not to. But there's another little door you open.
To know that we don't plead innocent.
Right, but there is another instance where we warehouse human beings. The United States is fast becoming one of our biggest businesses. If you combine nursing homes and prisons, one of our biggest growth industries is the warehousing of human beings. Because make no mistake that people in nursing homes are also warehoused.
Do you think that if in the 1960s they'd figured out that they could make a profit off of insane asylums, that they never would have passed all of the laws to put people with mental illness back on the streets?
Well, no, that was done by the Reagan administration. It was the Reagan administration in the 80s that broke America's mental health system into a shattered million pieces. Operating under the guise of being more humane, They turned the mentally ill out onto the streets, and of course being the Reagan administration and being Republicans, they were of course liars, and they said they had this plan where they were going to close all the state hospitals and they were going to quit funding state hospitals for the mentally ill, and we were going to mainstream everyone, and we were going to have support for them in halfway houses. Didn't we start out talking about halfway houses? And then, being Republicans, they just giggled and didn't fund them.
This sounds very familiar.
Well, look, the Republican Party is largely a one-trick pony. You know, the be me, you know.
Ann Richards, when she was the governor, put alcohol and drug treatment in every single state prison and every single jail.
Mm-hmm.
She put all of these programs in. And when George W. Stupid came in, he took all of them out.
Right. And how much difference is there between that and Ronald Reagan taking down the solar panels that Jimmy Carter put up on the White House, on the roof of the White House? It's a wildly, they're wildly different. They're wildly different areas, but they're the same. They're the same conceptually.
Right. Well, one is symbolic because I don't think they were getting that much electricity off of the solar panels, but.
Yeah, there were profound human repercussions from what George W. did. But again, please remember, this is a Republican. This is George W. Bush. This is the guy who giggled about pushing the button on Carla Faye Tucker.
Yeah.
And I know you know that story.
Yeah, I do. So, anyway, before I go,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to write a blog post, maybe tonight or maybe tomorrow, about the Levi Johnston's mom and about the parts that no one's talking about, which is what happens to children when their parents get convicted of a crime.
That should be very, very powerful, Cassie. Maybe you frame it.
I haven't seen anybody writing about that.
Maybe you frame it as an open letter to Levi Johnston.
And Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea.
Okay. I think I'm going to do that.
So school started?
School starts on Monday. I have my schedule. I have my books. I got closed out of some of my classes, but then I got back in.
So you will graduate on time.
I was always going to graduate on time. The question was, how many AP credits can I get while I'm still in high school so that it's cheaper than getting college credits?
Right.
Because to get the AP credit, all you have to do, I mean, you have to pass the test. You have to pay for the test. But actually, I have state aid to get the test paid for. And you have to buy, for AP English, you have to buy the books because the school has books, but if you use their books, you can't do highlighting and underlining and taking notes and all of that stuff.
Right.
As we go, and the teacher really wants everyone to do that. And I already, because I did pre-calculus, I already have the calculator that I need for physics and calculus.
Oh, physics, my old nemesis.
I like physics.
You're going to love it. Physics is wonderful. It just doesn't like me. Or it didn't when I ran screaming from it.
So I'm taking three APs, and I may take a fourth. The Spanish class I'm in, you can elect to take the AP at the end. A lot of people wait till Spanish 4, but I'm not going to be here for Spanish 4. This is my, you know, this is my senior year. So I'm in Spanish 3, and if I can do some studying on the side, then I may sign up for the AP. But fortunately, I'm really good friends with someone who's a Spanish teacher. So.
Yes, you are.
Yes, I am.
Shh, never tell.
And so it depends on the semester goes, and it depends on how I'm doing in the other classes. I am only going to be working 6 hours a week at Subway because I've got debate and I've got youth group and I've got three AP classes. And
Wait. You just kind of slid past it. Was that first one, I've got to date?
No.
Oh, I thought you said, I've got to date and I've got this and I've got that. What? No, okay. What was it?
No, I've got debate.
Debate. Okay. I'm all better with that now.
Debate.
Yes, debate. Okay.
I'm not quitting my job in order to date.
Just checking.
I can date
That's
at
my job.
I can date at midnight after work.
Mm. Our little girl's growing up.
Yep. Anyway.
So somewhere along the way, do you have an English class where you're going to go ahead and get James Joyce's Ulysses out of the way before you get to college?
I don't think so.
Well, okay, that's post graduation from high school summer reading. Write it down. Just get it. Do it. Get it out of the way. It's like in the language and literature world, it's like getting the secret lodge handshake.
Okay. I'll put it on the list.
You do that. We'll be rooting for you. I know you're just gonna kick butt and take names this year.
Oh yeah. I'm a senior. That's what we do. Bye.
Later, Cassie. Oh, mercy. She's getting all grown up and stuff. I'm trying to... We've watched Cassie's entire high school career, haven't we? Or pretty nearly, I think. Wow. Just wow. So it's about a quarter before the hour. And, yes, I'm informed that when I was telling you about the concert that we'll be doing live on the horn, I didn't bother to say what day. And that's because, like Flush Flimball, I am broadcasting with half my brain tied behind my back. The only problem is I need the other half that's behind my back. The live broadcast of the kickoff concert for Still Moving Mountains, The Journey Home, will be Sunday. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday! Where's that echo button? Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the horn. And it is going to be a heck of a lot of fun. So I hope you'll tune in for that. I can date after midnight. We are not going to let the Kincaid girls hear this archive. No. Not gonna happen. Yeah, John Fox, it'll be from about 2 p.m. to 6 p.m., if I understand correctly. And then John Fox will be along at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And we're still working out some hitches with the phones, and that's been going on for weeks now. But the folks on the other end, the CityNet folks, are working diligently. And frankly, 99% of this stuff is not their problem. They're still trying to solve it. It's not their problem. It's the last leg here, Verizon, you know, the gang that could screw up a one-car funeral. So, what else is on your mind this evening? I have a story here that was sent to me by our pal Juanita earlier today. She sent me a story about John Ensign, Senator John Ensign of Nevada, you know, the C Street dude. And it's absolutely astonishing. The AP News article by Scott Sonner says, Senator John Ensign told the Associated Press on Wednesday that his affair with a friend's wife was different from former President Bill Clinton's Senator John Ensign, some of these are hard to get through. Senator John Ensign told the Associated Press on Wednesday that his affair with a friend's wife was different from former President Bill Clinton's relationship with a White House intern because the girl he was doing didn't have a thong on. No, he doesn't say that. Because he didn't lie about it under oath. The Nevada Republican said, I haven't done anything legally wrong. President Clinton stood right before the American people and he lied to the American people. You remember that famous day he lied to the American people, plus the fact that I thought he committed perjury. That's why I voted for the articles of impeachment. I think it would be inappropriate to start any other way than to say I'm sorry. I've said I'm sorry. I can't say I'm sorry enough. I made a big mistake in my life and I apologize once again to all of you. Will you please get off my ass? No, the will you please get off my ass, it wasn't in there, but I know darn good and well he was thinking it. This was at a luncheon. A luncheon. It was a luncheon sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce in rural Fernley, Nevada, about 40 miles east of Reno. Wasn't that a famous book, East of Reno? No, that's East of Eden. He said that in front of a Chamber of Commerce luncheon in Fernley, Nevada, before about 100 people. And he got a standing ovation for it. Now, this is the whole affair where John Ensign's parents paid the woman and her family $96,000 for knocking knees with John Ensign after the affair became public. John Ensign called on President Clinton to resign from his office after the Lewinsky scandal in 1998. He said stentoriously, "The truth must come out." Yeah, I haven't done anything legally wrong. And this is where Juanita's genius comes in. It is difficult to get over a religious upbringing, and sometimes not getting it over it comes in awful handy, as it did in Juanita's case. Luke chapter 18. Two men went up into the temple to pray. The one, a Pharisee, and the other, a publican. Not a Republican, a publican. You know, usually in the Bible, it's the word publican is said in conjunction with another word, publican and sinners. Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, "God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this here publican. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess." And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." "I tell you," Jesus said, This man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted." How can they pound on the Bible day in and day out and never read anything in it? Holy mackerel! Oh, thank you, Juanita. That just, you know, that made my day when I read it. I haven't done anything legally wrong. Has anybody checked the books? Is adultery or fornication illegal in, say, Northern Virginia, the District of Columbia? You know, a lot of those creepy old laws are still on the books. How about Nevada? Well, okay, never mind. Don't say, come on. Well, wait a minute. Prostitution's illegal in Vegas. You got to go outside the city limits to go to the Bunny Ranch or the Mustang Ranch or the Skank Ranch or whatever. I wouldn't be so quick with that. I haven't done anything legally wrong, Senator Ensign. Because that Bible you so fond of thumping, that thing might come back. Sometimes that Bible's known to bite. "For everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted." Yeah. Let's check the phone lines. Hey, welcome to the program.
Matthew 7:23. "Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. That's Jesus speaking.
Yes, it is.
These people don't know Jesus.
Not if they saw him on the street in the robe and sandals, they wouldn't know him.
No, they wouldn't, man. I was actually out today, and I was actually thinking about you, and there was a couple things I wanted to say last night, but I know you had a lot of callers. And I said, well, you know, I'll hold my tongue. And it's very funny that you are talking about the exact thing I was going to, you know, want to talk about. But before I ask you about that, I want to ask you a question, Bob. I was watching this movie, and I never saw that movie, We Are Marshall.
Yes.
I know you're from West Virginia and everything. What do you know about that story? Because I think we're about the same age, so you were a kid when that happened, correct?
Yes, I was, in fact, a child.
Pretty much, I would assume, right?
Yeah, and, you know, there are some who would argue that I still am, but no. Obviously, it is based in fact. Virtually the entire Marshall football team was, in fact, killed in a horrible, horrible, horrible airplane crash at the Cerrito Canova Airport. And they insisted on fielding a football team. And I think it was the right thing to do.
Okay. I was wondering about you, because I was wondering how much, like, were you, I don't know where you live in Virginia, you know, I don't know anything, you know.
No, I was still growing up in Alabama at the time, but we knew about it because my father, Marshall University was beloved to my father, and he was just devastated when it happened. As was everyone in the state. It was just a horror. And the man who came in and agreed to coach that team that first year after the accident, it deserves the undying gratitude of this entire state and certainly the university community, for what he did. I don't think any football coach has ever had a harder job. So, yes, it was glamorized for the sake of film. He didn't exactly look like Matthew McConaughey, for starters. But there was a pretty good bit of truth in it. And it's a good film.
Yeah, I was just watching, I was wondering. Because I had been meaning to call you to ask you about Pat White, because we drafted Pat White. And I know we talk about religion a lot. I know you talk about religion a lot. So sometimes I like to call about man's true religion, which is football, as we know.
Yeah, well, we do know that, don't we? And it's about time to get on our knees.
Yeah.
Now, when you say
lighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, which part of we are you talking about? Drafted Pat White.
Oh, my team, Dolphins, Miami Dolphins.
Okay, right. I kind of had, because I knew it wasn't the Ravens or anything.
And we got Chad Pennington, so we got another, you know.
Yeah. You know what? I hope they let Pat White's talents shine. He is such an incredibly decent young man that I just want him to do well. As we say where I grew up, he was raised right. You know, his daddy's a fire chief, and his mama's a devout woman who managed to raise two sons apparently very, very well. And there was a certain amount of justification in his success because, you know, he comes from Daphne, Alabama, down there in the little sort of panhandle boot heel whatever of Alabama. And Alabama didn't want him to play quarterback. Auburn didn't want him to play quarterback. Georgia said, you'll be a fine defensive back, son. And so did LSU. And he kept saying, but I want to play quarterback. And at the time, Rich Rodriguez sent his staff down there and said, son, you want to play quarterback? We want you to play quarterback. And he said, how do you spell Mountaineer? And where is this place in Virginia? And that's when, son, it's in West Virginia. It's another state. But that's okay. We'll get you over that hump. And I mean, I'm making some of this stuff up. But really, he is a fine, fine young man. And I hope he is the antidote to all the little thugs that came out of West Virginia toward the end of the Don Nealon era, and I'm thinking particularly of Pac-Man Jones and
Virginia. Yeah, that guy got a problem.
Bad, but you know, he's not that far. He's not that far worse than who's the guy at the Bengals that couldn't stay out of prison long enough to play football? A wideout.
They got so many, man.
Yeah, well, the Bengals roster is more of a police blotter than anything else.
You talking about Ocho DeCinco, whatever his name is?
No. This is
he hasn't been in jail, actually. I'm trying to think, who's the other wide receiver you're talking about?
Somebody will write me in a minute and get that set up. Yeah.
Not a follow-up Bengals football.
Well, Pac-Man Jones. Look, if Patrick White plays a stellar Hall of Fame career, never misses a game, proves goes both ways, plays 60 minutes a game, he's still going to have some doing to rub out Pac-Man Jones's reputation from what he did to West Virginia. I mean, that young man is a mess.
Yeah, no, it's just like, man, do you really want to go to West Virginia? Because, I mean, that program is probably saying, my God, he's just killing our recruiting. Come on, dude.
Yeah, and of course, it is that time of year, and I am sweating bullets. I'm sweating bullets over the Mountaineer season because I think we were picked to finish last in the Big East. And yet I've still got all these unrepentant optimists around me going, we're going undefeated. I'm like, what color is the sky in your world?
Well, you never know. But, I mean, the thing is, Dolphins run that wild card offense. That's why they brought him in here. And if they hadn't got him, they would have picked up Vic. So I'm very glad that we did get Pat White because if not, they would have gotten Vic. I mean, that was definitely he was under the radar,
Right, and Pat White's only 22 years old. He literally still has another year's growth in him or so.
Yeah, well, what happened was Belichick was what happened is that Belichick was making a move to pull Pat White. He was going to move, and Dolphins moved on him first. Because Dolphins actually had 2 second-round picks, and they picked him up higher because they knew that Belichick was scouting him. So, with Belichick, I mean, that almost probably might have been perfect for the Patriots, if you think about it, with Brady.
Oh, sure.
That would have been, the perfect, move, and Dolphins says, oh, no. Not doing that.
No, you can't. Sometimes, that's the fun thing about the draft process, Gary, is that sometimes you make picks based on for defensive reasons, and I don't mean the defense in football, but you make it's the old Bo Schembechler, the Bear Bryant thing where you recruit every quarterback in the state and you sit down 19 of them, no matter how good they are, just to make sure that Ohio State or Auburn or whoever doesn't get them. But in this case, I think the Dolphins have somebody really special in the form of Pat White.
Well, you'll be glad to know, me as a diehard Dolphin fan, I watch every play, every game, preseason. If I can get to a scrimmage, if I go down there, I go to, so that how that is. But I watched him play the other night. He was good. I mean, and the thing that was funny about, if you go look up his stats, he was, he just had a bad night because he had an interception. And, he had some incompletions. But that's why you have to watch the game. They had a rainstorm, and the receivers basically were just dropping the ball, but he was hitting right in the numbers. And the interception that he threw was basically just bounced off a guy's hands. Hit him in the numbers, got bounced off his hands. So he actually did really good. A lot of people were impressed with him.
And that was always the rap on him. Well, he's not much of a passer because he had such profound legs and such profound running ability. But he got to where he could throw a very, very nice ball.
He threw it the other night. I mean, he was rolling out, throwing on the run, which, being a lefty is, he went the other way and threw the other way against his body, and it was right on money. So, I heard he had been having some struggles in practice, and they changed his throwing motion, and he was just, so now he's trying to get a little used to that. But from what I saw the other night, whatever it is, they taught him how to throw, he was looking pretty good.
And see, that was the real shame of last year's Mountaineer season, because with Rich Rodriguez gone and Bill Stewart, the head coach, he brought in a guy who, an offensive coordinator who knew how to run the spread, but of course it was a different spread. And the first thing they did, and this just baffled me, Gary, the first thing they did was they took a kid who has been doing rollout, the play-action passing for 3 solid years and earned himself a Heisman nod with it and tried to turn him into a drop-back pocket passer. And it just didn't work.
But I can tell you, he is so lucky because he is at the right team because Dolphins are committed to the Wildcat spread offense. that is something they do. Even last year, when it wasn't, even when it wasn't working hardly in some games, they still would run a certain amount of plays with it. So they're committed to it. There's no other NFL team right now doing it, at least as advanced as Dolphins are, because, I mean, some of them are not trying to implement it. But basically, he's at the perfect team for him, for his what he needs to do. And then you got Chad Pennington, who, you know, is getting up there in his age. You know, he's in a good spot, man. I mean, he's blessed. And he was blessed in the draft. And he got a second-round pick, a high pick, so he got the money, too.
Yeah.
You know.
So. And, you know, Chad Pennington's problem with the Jets was just staying healthy. And that's just, you know, that's poor drafting too, because he didn't have a line that could keep people off of him. He got broken.
Yeah, if Chad Pennington had, I would say this undoubtedly, he's the smartest quarterback in the NFL. And I don't care, anybody can argue with me, they can talk about Peyton Manning or whatever. I'll put Chad Pennington. The only problem is he just doesn't have the arm and a quick release like Peyton Manning. But if you really watch him and how he plays, he doesn't throw. You know, people saying, well, with the Jets, he threw, you know, through some interception, but I've watched him over the years. He's not interception prone. I mean, just, he's a very smart quarterback. I mean, the guy handles the ball very well.
Well, there needs to be a statistic, somehow or another, of interceptions that are the quarterback's fault and interceptions that aren't. Because there, you know, if you watch carefully, there are interceptions out there that the quarterback is utterly not responsible for.
Name Pennington's wide receivers during his years.
Oh, I can't.
You can't. I mean, you could talk about that. Say, oh, well, you had what's the guy's name? He's the analyst now. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Keyshawn.
Keyshawn had Keyshawn for a little bit, and
but Keyshawn was gone. Keyshawn was gone before from the Jets before Pennington had a chance to get his pads on, wasn't he?
I think he came in like right near the tail end. I can't recall because, you know, it's been a while, but I believe they played together at least one or two seasons, you know. I just had
because I remember Keyshawn for his Pulitzer nominated autobiography Throw Me the Damn Ball.
Yeah he wasn't with Tampa Bay that long, so I'm pretty sure they played at least one or two seasons together, and then he finished up with Carolina,
right?
So I think they got one or two seasons in there, but you know, Pennington didn't have no great, and he didn't have no great tight end. So, you know, you look at Manning, he has like.
And you got to remember who Chad Pennington was throwing to in college. Do you remember that?
Yeah, Randy Moss.
Yeah. Makes a difference.
It makes a difference. That's why he got drafted.
Yeah.
But you know.
But see, if you can get both of those, if the Dolphins can get both of those quarterbacks banging on all eight, then you can mix it up a lot because. Well, I'm pleased that they're letting Pat White throw the ball, and they haven't just automatically thrown him into a flanker position or a wide out or, you know, sort of utility quarterback kind of thing. He deserves a chance under center.
Quarterback. They want to be a quarterback.
Yeah. But if you get those two going, either one can back the other up, very, very nicely. Now, I think it would be a mistake to expect Pat White to be some sort of killer QB in his rookie season. My God, I remember the amount of time that Peyton Manning spent on his back, you know, when he first entered the league. And that is a surefire way to destroy a young talent under at the quarterback position. I just don't think it's wise. I mean, how many times have we seen that happen?
Now they're going to start. They're talking about starting Sanchez or whatever. You know, so it's like, okay, here we go.
And you know what? When you're installing that spread, I have never seen it installed that the first couple of seasons weren't rougher than a cob, because there's a big learning curve with that offense. So, you know, the Dolphins are in year two with it, and you should see some improvement this year if that thing is going to work in the NFL. I mean, I remember what was his name down at Atlanta who ran the It was a pass intensive offense, the run and shoot. And, you know, it never really, really caught on in the NFL. Maybe because the corners and the safeties are so much faster and so much smarter than they are in college. But, you know, I'll be curious to see if the Dolphins can make the spread go in the NFL, because if they have any success at all, you'll see other people moving to it too.
they had success last year. That's why they was in the playoffs. I mean, that's the reason why they got there, because they had an innovative offense. That's what, you know, what really helped them. And Belichick was like, you know, he was dumbfounded by it. He couldn't deal with it. You know, that's why they beat him so bad. But I know this is not a football sports network, so I don't want to go too far into it because your audience will be just.
Well, I do have an update. I do have an update for you, Gary. Our buddy Jared writes in and says, that's Chris Henry you're trying to remember, Bob. He's never been charged with a felony, though, only misdemeanors. He was cut but re-signed because he had talent, and all the other receivers didn't. Chad Ochocinco has never even been arrested, and from what I understand, off the field, out of the locker room, he's one of the dullest people in the world. Ohio State lost a starting linebacker August 8th because of an overzealous Florida fan decided the best way to kneecap the Buckeyes was to strike him unprovoked and from behind so hard in a Florida chain restaurant that the linebacker's head bounced off the floor and needed emergency brain surgery to release fluid pressure on the brain. Needless to say, the linebacker's out for the year. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, man, the Florida fans, you know, Florida's a very, you know, I don't know if you know a lot about, going back into.
That's all right. It's Friday. That's what this is for.
Gainesville. I know you would like this, man. That is like, you want to talk about holy rollers. You
know, well, and they got the ultimate holy roller as quarterback down there. I'm so sick of Tim Tebow, I could just puke.
But I'm just saying that if you ever watch this movie on this thing that comes on HBO called True Blood, you ever heard of it?
My family are huge fans.
Okay. The Christian organization that, you know, they kind of mock in that, there are a number of those in Gainesville, Florida. A number of those. Because I know, because I used to be a part of the United Church of Christ, and I know that it's a cult, basically, because I was, you know, kind of a part of it. I never went deep into it. But, and I went to some of those retreats, yes. And it's worse now. I know it's worse now because I remember how it was then. I know, you know, doing it. So what I'm saying is that whole football culture from Florida, man, and those people, well, if I had a son or whatever, and he was, I would keep him away from Florida. Keep him away from it. I'm sorry. I know some people understand, so they're going to go, oh, he's talking so bad about my alma mater, whatever, man. Tell him.
Well, no, see, there is not a team inside the Southeastern Conference, Gary, that you can't make a compelling argument doesn't have the worst fans on earth. And usually, even the school's fans will admit it. The Georgia fans, Florida fans, the Alabama fans, LSU fans, Tennessee fans, worst fans on earth.
But what I'm saying is that when you get to the Florida fans outside of that, when you get into that little religious complex, it's because first of all, it is, you know, you have a lot of, you know, different diversity of people there. I'll give them that. But I'm saying that, you know, it's not like you go to Georgia or Alabama, it's just certain places I just can't show up. You can show up there, but it's like you better be on God's program, or, you know.
Oh, yes. You know, you may have just come up with the line for the night. There's some places I just can't show up.
You know, the only way I can get out of there is just say, I love Jesus. If I say that, they don't care if I'm black, white, blue, or whatever. Come on, bro. That's the escape line. If you don't say that, you're done.
Oh, mercy. It's so true. You know, Mark Richt is Jesus' best friend. I think we remarked on that last night at Georgia. And of course, you know, you got Tim Tebow, he's Jesus's quarterback at Florida. You know, at least I can respect.
I highly doubt he'd have a long career in the NFL. I highly doubt it.
Oh no, he's not. I would not take a bet that he will do well in the NFL. Because A, if I took the he will do well, I know I'd lose, and it would be like taking somebody's money if I took the other side. And he may very well not even want to go to the NFL. He may want to go off and be a missionary in Malaysia, because that's what he comes from.
Great, go. Stay.
Goodbye. Your 4 years are up, right? I mean, because it feels like he's been at Florida since, you know, since God was a baby.
Yeah, we need to check his birth certificate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, where's Tim Tebow's long form?
Where was he born? You know, he got some funny looking eyes.
No, that's just the religious.
So you probably got a lot of other callers. I don't want.
No, those eyes are just the religious insanity trying to leak out, Gary.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's what that is.
Man, this is. I'm glad you broke it up with this. That's wonderful.
Yeah. I'll catch you on another night. Whatever. I'm gonna try to hit you off with something next week. I'm hoping to get something in my little PayPal account. It's been barren for like 2 months now. But
I keep hearing the dust whistle across ours too. So we appreciate it.
No, I
kid. We had a lot of help and a lot of support for the Netroots Nation trip.
Yeah, but you're gonna need something going forward. I mean, I did help out with I helped some of your sister people. What is it? The White Rose Society. Cause I know that I saw that they were having a fun drive, and I had been listening to some archives. Cause I've been gone so much, I've been trying to catch up with stuff. So I've been going to archives, and I noticed they needed some money, so I said, I got to spread.
Well, Ben Birch can always use the help, because nothing happens here that Ben Birch doesn't have a hand in.
Yeah, but you guys got to really figure out some kind of way to, because I mean, people kind of live, make a living, going through the poor people like me or whatever. I mean, you guys got to find some way to get to some of these guys, these Soroses or whoever, to just say, look, man, could you just do us a favor?
You know what, Gary? You are speaking.
That has to happen.
You're speaking truth past truth, because we have, I mean, Guy James, me, Boss Man Wayne, and a lot of other people are constantly working on this. And I mean, I could get Guy on the line here, and we could talk about it. We even heard it, sad to say, at Netroots Nation. There was a panel that Guy sat in on, and they were and this particular panel, they were bemoaning their lack of getting the message out fast enough. And Guy asks, well, what's your relationship with liberal media, liberal radio, liberal TV? And the answer was, well, we don't really have one, because we don't think we need them, because we got all these bloggers. And it's not, that's what makes it so special, what Coal River Mountain Watch does in terms of keeping us going, is that they get the necessity for something like this. And I got to tell you, Gary, that is a rarity. That's a pearl of great price, man. Because...
Yeah, it seems like it. Can you quantify? I mean, I guess somehow you can quantify how many listeners you got. I mean, I don't know how it works. I mean, something that you can go to them with numbers and say this.
Oh, we do. We do.
We tell you what these people.
We go and we say, look, this is what we do on a shoestring.
Yeah.
If we have a little bit of support to keep us more than just breathing, we can triple it, quadruple it. Pressed down, shaken together, 10 times, 100 times, we can do that.
See, what they don't understand is blogging and all that stuff and reading is stuff that people do is nice, but people in general are lazy. So videos and audio, which is a format of radio, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And TV, because I was in advertising, that's what I used to do, is easier for them. So you're always going to reach more people that way than a blog, because that's written, you know what I'm saying? You're always going to reach more people that way. I mean, it's just basic concept.
Yeah, and the media are changing. It's not going to be 5 years before new cars have internet receivers in them, and people can listen to internet radio on their dashboard as easy as they do terrestrial. It's not that far away.
Yeah, you can clean your house, paint your house while you're listening to the horn.
Well, we've got our buddy,
paint your house.
Yeah, our buddy Alan the trucker goes down the road listening to the horn. Yeah, I mean, it can be done if you're within a coverage area, and as things.
What I was thinking, I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, it's okay.
What I was going to say, I just had a thought, and I just didn't want to lose it. What I was thinking about when I was thinking about you, and I actually had listened to a little bit of Guy James' show, is one thing, when I was working with the National Action Network, which is Reverend Al Sharpton's network in New York, one thing I always noticed about him, whenever they had, because he just had these little protests and, whatever, and they would have in New York or whatever, but, you know what he does. I mean, he does the shakedown. I mean, he basically owns these corporations or whatever, this and that, and he makes these protests, and then next thing you know, he's getting a check from them to say, hey, we're going to sponsor it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is that any way that, I'm not saying you got to go threaten these liberal people who have money, but is there any way you just get a list of people or corporate or whoever and say, you know what? We're tired of you spitting this garbage like Gun Black or, whoever this and this and this and that. And then what happens is these companies say, okay, well, if you lay off of us, we'll just stay off of you. We'll just cut your check. You can do whatever. They don't even ask you because they don't want no equity control. They just want you to leave them F alone. So that's the model that, you know, he uses in a lot of other, you know, as you know, a lot of other organizations. I know that you guys have thought about this, but I'm wondering, is there some way that you guys could, you know, or we, or maybe I can help out too, is that, because, you know, you can't do everything, obviously, you guys. But is there any way that we could just say, as a collective, say, you know what, can we monitor these people and, you know, threaten to do X, Y, and Z if they don't support us? Or, you know, or, I mean, I'm just saying, there has to be some...
Well, yeah, and I understand what you're saying because, like, you know, I started the program this evening with that story about Fiji Water. And the owners of Fiji Water are serious liberal money backers. I mean, they've given to Al Gore, they've given to Barack Obama, they've given to Democrat. You know, and the woman brags about her Rolodex having Arianna Huffington and Lori David in it. And then back where the Fiji Water comes from is a flipping nightmare, where journalists get shaken down by the police for writing bad things about the government. Maybe they're trying to harm Fiji Water. You know, it could very well be that we're going to find out that Fiji and Fiji Water are the perfect marriage of corporation and state. And lo and behold, look what you get, a fascist dictatorship. How about that?
Well, is there any way to go to people who we know are correct? I mean, whether it be George Soros or anybody else, and just put them on the spot and just say, look, what are you doing here? You know, help us out.
I'm not naysaying what you've said, but I've done that.
Okay.
I have done that.
Yeah,
I've looked people in the eye and explained what we're doing. They're like, that's great, Bob. We really need that. It's wonderful you're doing it. Man, you're good at it. And I say, how about a little money to keep us going? We're broke. And then a week later, you find out that they've gone out and bought paid for an advertising campaign through a media buyer who is the brother-in-law of the person you were talking to, and they've spent umpty million dollars at CNN. I have seen that happen. You know, I don't like us having to live on the model we live on, and I wouldn't call what anybody's doing here living, frankly. Nobody's making down payments on the timeshare in Bermuda. But, you know, we're keeping the lights on, we're keeping things going. And, you know, with heroic effort, we make things like, you guys make things like Netroots Nation happen, and you keep Ben Birch going at White Rose Society. But we're operating on that model because that model is what we've been left with.
Yeah.
You know, it was, we were probably 2 years old before or almost 2 years old before we set up the PayPal button and I ever solicited money.
Yeah, I remember. I know you were really torn about doing it.
And I remain torn to this day because I know how hard people work to get it.
Yeah, but you also, I think you also don't want to become a, I think you've been, you know, I don't want to do no psychoanalysis because I'm not here to judge anybody, but I would just say this with my, just knowing you and, you know, because I get to know you, you know, we all get to know you. And that's the one thing you give of yourself when you do this. And that's one of the great things that you're willing to do that, sacrifice that, is that you didn't want to become a preacher.
No. And, yeah, I've said that. Because sometimes I feel real oily when I make a hard pitch. But I only make them when...
You want to become Alex Jones, man.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for... You said it and I didn't. But I don't.
Okay.
But you know, the fact remains that it takes a couple of grand. Actually, it takes more than a couple of grand to keep things going here every month. And so, what we don't make in what we get, we make up out of our own hide. And that takes a heck of a toll.
Well, I will just let you know if it comforts you. Whenever I can send some money to you, it makes me feel good.
I appreciate that, Gary. I really, really do.
I will definitely tell you that it does. You know, whenever I, you know, and I tell you how I do things. I don't send just money to you. I kind of spread the love. So that's why, you know, everybody gets just a certain pittance.
Right.
and some people.
Well, it is no pittance.
List off over. But I'm saying that I'm pretty sure that those who do give, I think I'm pretty sure they feel the same way. So
you're right, and I get emails from people who say I can't, and God, I wish I could. And I understand that. I understand that very much too. And see, that's the other beautiful thing is that when people do support the horn, they're not just supporting keeping the horn on the air. They're also speaking for the people who cannot speak for themselves that way. And
I would just say to anybody who's on the line, who's listening, because, you know, people archive this, you know, and sometimes I do this with whenever I do things, whatever. You know, if you're going to go to a movie, they say, or go to buy a burger or something, just say, you know what? I'm going to fast. I'm not going to buy this burger. I'm not going to even go see this movie. And I'm going to give money to a liberal media outlet. Just one burger. That's all you got to do. You know, $10, that's all you got to do, because that's what it just about costs now to buy a burger or go to a movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I think people, I mean, I know it's hard to do in this time. Everybody want to enjoy themselves. But I think you can do that and say, I won't go to this movie, but I'll go read a book. And I think if people do it that way, I think we all, and I'm talking to myself as well. I have to keep that concept. You know, if I just make that sacrifice, you know, then maybe, you know, that'll keep things going until you guys figure out something long term, you know, that works, you know, works for you.
And I hope we do. And the other side of that is the more that we expand the audience, the less that the people who are contributing to keep the horn afloat have to contribute. You know, if you've got 10 people contributing, you can cut it by 10 if you get it to 100. You can cut it by 100 if you get it to 1,000. You see what I'm saying? And still maintain.
If you can come up with a model, everybody can somehow figure out to give at least $120, which is about $10 a month or whatever. I think that's a workable model. I mean, even if it's not $5 a month, like if you keep doubling that up.
Yeah.
But I think if people can just get to that point where they say, okay, you know, because $5 people can do. I mean, you know, for the most part, I can't talk for everybody. But I'm pretty sure you can save up $5.
Oh yeah, if we had every single
$10 might get hard for people.
If we had every single person who has ever listened to the horn do five bucks, I could shut up for a long time. I really could.
Oh, you could.
Yeah, because we get it out there. It's just that everybody's strapped and everybody's beat, especially right now. And you know, we're also being liberals. We want to do what you do. We want to spread the love. And so I don't know if your email box is like mine is, Gary, but I probably get 15 please give emails a day.
Yeah. Oh, I get more than that.
And it's coming from the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, it's coming from the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, it's coming from Barack Obama's organization, it's coming from Move On, and I'm not criticizing any of these people because they're having to operate on the same model, and it is a hard road to hoe, brother.
I already given to Barack Obama's organization. I got them in there, so now they need to do what they got to do. They're not going to get any more money from me until I see some health care pass. I'm sorry, whatever.
And, you know, they need to hear that message. You're absolutely right.
But they are hearing it because I told them I'm not sending more money.
Well, Gary, I tell you what, this has been a wonderful conversation from start to finish, and I'm glad we had it on this Friday.
Okay, man. Well, you have a great weekend.
You too. And check out the concert Sunday afternoon if you feel like it.
Okay, but yeah, definitely I'll be hitting you with something, you know, next week. And don't feel ashamed to hit me with an email and say, hey, man, where's the pledge?
I won't bug you, but when I get it, I will send you a thank you.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
All right, thanks, Gary. Later. Our buddy Gary and a really good football conversation, and I need those now and then because it is that time of year. And Ferg, it looks like Ferg's gonna be a 60-minute man in eighth grade football. He's playing both ways. Going to play some linebacker, maybe play some tight end, and starting. Maybe starting. We're still working on starting. But he's excited. He's very excited. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, happy Friday there, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Reverbo?
Well, football, which is basically a, you know, barely controlled violence. You do love having mix Jesus in there with it. Some, you know, they always do. And
oh, yeah, you catch that pass and you get to the end zone and you point that index finger up at the sky.
Oh, yeah, and you, well, I mean, just any time before we indulge in any kind of, you know, violent behavior, I think we need a little prayer.
You've got to do some praying. Yeah. Well, you know, it was a couple of years ago when Texas enacted that... Wow, where have I got a dial tone coming from?
I heard that, too.
That was strange. Oh, well, it cleared. They enacted that statute that, you know, that made sure that, you know, there was going to be a prayer zone. All your schools, stadiums, you know, where you can stand, you know, this little square where you can stand there and handle snakes and drink strychnine, whatever you want. Yeah, you got to have some praying with football.
Well, you know, and it goes back to that. We got to have some praying before there's just any sort of killing or stabbing or hitting, right?
Oh, sure. You remember the movie Patton and the Patton's prayer for clear weather so he could bomb the Germans?
Oh, absolutely. But he probably had a direct line. I'd be listening to old George. But and it reminds me again of that. I can't think of exactly how it goes, of course, but that great quote. You know how you just nothing. You incite people to violence with more delightfully and eagerly than if you can make that religious connection.
Exactly. Make sure that they understand that this is, you know, this is God's work.
Yeah. There's an eagerness net there. I mean, no one's holding back. Let's go get to killing. But the funny part, I've got a funny part here. You're into funny stuff, aren't you, Bob?
I like the funny.
So earlier this week, I kind of spaced out that you weren't around. Okay, and so I'm listening to one of your shows, and it never even occurred to me that it could be a rerun. And so I hear something I like, and I immediately I email you. And sometimes you read my emails on the air, sometimes you don't. But anyway, so you keep going, and I just think, there's something funny about this. And so I'm listening for a while long, and then I decide to call. And I actually called a rerun. Now, you know, Bob, in my earlier days,
you know, if I was considerate at all, I'd cut a little. It wouldn't take long to cut a little audio piece or verbo that says, "You're listening to the best of Bob Kincaid on the horn. He's not here right now." But I haven't gotten around to doing that yet.
Well, okay, I'll take responsibility for just being an idiot. And what you know, in my younger days, you were never going to be able to confuse me with a saint, okay? And it might have been the kind of thing that I would have got. I could see maybe I might be confused 20 years ago, but earlier this week it was I felt kind of dumb. However, I should tell you that the topic, of course, was just got me going. It's one of our favorite topics, and when you were talking to somebody about it, we were revisiting secession, of course. And
yeah, this is when I got the email from you about it's time to reconsider the divorce.
Yeah, so. Oh, God.
I do read these things, you know.
Was that a rerun or was that not a rerun?
No, it was a rerun.
All right, good. So so right away I just had that's one of my favorite topics because I really do think that it's time that we should revisit this. There's no question about it. Everybody be happy. You know, you've got, it's like a wife or a husband, you know, some drunken fool spouse who is chasing you around the house drunk, you know, with a Bible. I mean, it's just, let's just give it a miss. Let's just let bygones be bygones and just get this over with.
Yeah, let's not call in the domestic violence claim. Let's just go to the shelter tomorrow.
We don't have to, like, go to a mediator. We've tried all this. We've been through all this. We just don't need to do it. And so, you know, then I was getting on to the that great thing about, you know, the blue states and red states. Like, we, you know, this would be great for you. I got a couple more here I'm going to drop on you. So I was thinking... you know, we can build, this way we can build the green world of tomorrow. You can tie up your mule behind the plantation. I mean, that's perfect. Here, how about this one? This is a good one. We'll keep growing. You can keep smoking.
That is it. That's a beauty. Yep.
What's not to like about this? This would work for everybody.
But, you know, there's as I read it, and I read your email, like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning or something. And as I read it, I did perceive a flaw, Reverbo.
Okay.
Because people like you, where you are, and people like me, where I am, we're going to have to do some sort of a diaspora. And if you remember when the British got out of India and then India had to sort out who was going to be what, you had all those Muslims heading for Pakistan. And you had all those Hindus heading for India. And there's literally this vast teeming horde of human beings going in opposite directions. And somewhere along the way, somebody says, you stupid Hindu or you dumb Muslim. And look, a war broke out that has not ever really settled down yet. And I'm just wondering where the yous and me's and the liberals in Alabama and the liberals in Texas, where do we go?
Well, it's going to have to shake out. The first 10 or 20 years are going to be, you know, a little tense, a little confusing. You know, we're going to look for things and they're not going to be there. And
I mean, are Kentucky and Maryland and Missouri and West Virginia going to be the DMZs again, like they were in that little dust up 140 years ago?
Could be. But it needs to really get, because it'll never clear up until we really do have to find as they say, put it on the docket and get it in front of, the judge. And it should be a no-fault divorce, I think. So let's not even get this complicated.
No. We won't plead adultery. We won't plead that the South has been sleeping with fascism.
Get the chainsaw out, and like somebody's going to say, we're going to have to saw Virginia in half. You know, saw Maryland in half. No, we don't have to do that.
Or as the Southerners wanted to do, dig a big ditch around Massachusetts and float it out to sea. Can't do that either. But I understand. You know, this is one of those places where you wish that there was a little more creative legislating going on in the Congress, Reverbo. You remember when Congressman, was his name Weiner, introduced that amendment a couple of weeks ago, allowing all the Republicans that wanted to vote to end Medicare because it's government medicine?
Yes.
And you remember, I mean, that thing was pretty stunning. It had some legs for a couple of days. We need more of that. We need somebody from, California or Wisconsin or Minnesota or New York to introduce a bill separating the old Confederacy from the United States. And telling them, congratulations, you win, you're on your own. We were just a little late coming to our senses and seeing the rightness of your ways.
It's beautiful, and especially because they're so easy to fool, they don't realize when they're being ridiculed because they have a sense of humor of like a seventh grade.
And you know, the right wing has never hesitated to introduce constitutional amendments that were going nowhere. Consider any flag burning amendment, any defense of marriage amendment.
Oh yeah.
Put it out there. They were very effective with it. Let's take this play from their playbook.
I think it's a beauty. They'll actually consider it, and it may work. And, you know, one day, it could be soon, we could all wake up, and they're not part of the union anymore. God, would that be priceless? Oh, jeez.
But I am going to get hate mail from Texas, from liberals in Texas and liberals in Mississippi and liberals in Alabama and liberals in Georgia. Go, wait, you can't do this to us. It's already weird enough down here as it is.
Well, maybe there'll be a questionnaire or something. We'll figure out how to keep them with us.
Building off of my conversation with Gary earlier, maybe we can have a draft. There's probably some wingnut in, I'm going to freeze no matter where I go. See, that's the problem.
Arkansas.
Yeah, there's a wing.
I'll go there for you. Pick one. Let's go to Georgia.
Well, no, I'm already among wingnuts here, okay? I am. So I'm trying to figure, you know, there's a wingnut in PA or a wing. Remember, PA is, you know, Pittsburgh in the west, Pennsylvania in the east, and Alabama in the middle. But there's a wingnut in Wisconsin there. How about Wisconsin? There's a wingnut in Wisconsin that could easily be traded to West Virginia and moved into a nice happy house next to a mountaintop removal site, and I get a house on a dairy farm.
Maybe we do have to do it like that.
But I'm going to freeze my little redneck ass off.
Well, look, we do know that yes, they will get the warmer weather, but they'll also get we'll also get Caltech and MIT. So we'll figure out a way.
That's true. There are plenty of wing nuts to be run out of Washington and Oregon and California.
So let's see. I'll trade you. You know where I live. So let's see. I'll trade because I got. Of course, we'll have to be transferred to the blue team and out of the red team. So.
But see, my luck. Yeah, I'll get sent to Michigan.
Three rednecks. Let's see. I'll trade you three necks and a wing nut for. Well, you can see where this is going.
Right, because you've got to establish a baseline value. So, the fact that we're moving relatively smaller numbers of people out of Alabama, but you know what? They're not going to go willingly. Reverbo, liberals in Alabama love their Alabama. As do liberals in Arkansas.
And I'm sure there's some very uptight and tight-assed Bible thumpers.
Oh, yeah, the weirdo in Wisconsin is not going to go willingly.
He might like it up there. I mean, they got, it's America. We can make it work.
Oh, yeah, and I'm getting confirmation in the chat room. Speaking of California, Sparky says, we got lots of wing nuts here, Bob.
Oh, yeah. What is the population of that wonderful state now? Is it it's over 30 million, isn't it?
Gosh, I think so.
That's just unbelievable. And they're broke.
And a corporation owns a whole lot of their water.
Oh.
For pistachio, almond, and pomegranate farms.
They got pistachio nut farms out there?
Oh, yeah. And the almond farms are where they work the bee colonies to death.
Okay, well, what are we going to do about California in this, if we go ahead and, slice the union down the middle, what are we going to do? I want those pistachio nut farms, Bob.
I understand. I do, too. I want pomegranate farms.
Yeah. But, we'll have to, there's going to be some wheeling and dealing. And let's not forget that America's quality wines are out there, too.
Well, absolutely. And you know what? At the end of the day, I think in this scenario, Reverbo, what you come down to is you're going to have some folks left over who become Palestinians.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, well, we got to learn from history. We can't. Nothing good can come of that.
No.
People truly in the wilderness with no. They have no. No home at all. Hey, the name South America has already been taken. What do you suppose they're going to call their new country?
Oh, they've already got a name. They've been working on it for 150 years.
I'd like to see the list.
Confederate States of America.
Perfect. The CSA. Okay. Man, they got the flag. You're right. They got all the stuff. They got all the gear.
And
already.
David from Maine turned me on to a film a couple of years ago that I can't remember the name of, but it just blew me away. It was a mockumentary of the CSA with the Confederate States having won the Civil War and what the CSA would be today. And I can't remember the name of it, and it's driving me nuts because if you could see this, you would not be a well man for a solid week.
I want to see it tonight. Was it a real cheap indie film, or was it actually a?
Yeah, it was pretty indie. It was pretty indie, but it was done. It was done brilliantly because it had all the TV ads and everything. Oh, I'll get an email in a minute, and if it doesn't come during the show, I'll send it off to you, and you will then go forth and find it.
Yeah, I bet it's on the net somewhere. There's probably a link to it streaming from somewhere. It is. Here's something else that I don't know if you talked about this. You haven't been around that much, but this came up. And if you already talked about it, it doesn't matter. our friend Mr. Boner made a total fool out of himself recently, and I'm sure you followed this. Oh, man, this guy got up, and he got himself all twisted in a knot and had to publicly admonish the big pharma and the medical industrial complex for trying to muscle their way into this whole White House healthcare debate. Did you hear about this?
No.
Oh, yeah. He read them the Riot Act about, well, that's not the way we do things in America. Okay. You don't try to lobby your way into legislation in this country. That's not the way we do things here. And you know, like you describe what happens to you when you hear, like, that you thought were basically intelligent human beings, when you hear these words come out of their mouth, that just, you need a place to lie down for a minute, because you...
I want one of those little dating game soundproof booths.
The isolation booth.
Yeah, where you can go in and close the door and just scream until you're purple in the face, take a deep breath, and come back out and be all right.
But let's consider the source here. I am not making, you can't make this stuff up. You don't do that. And I was thinking, oh, really? Well, yeah, we wish nobody did that. But John, I believe Boner's first name is John, right? He's from Ohio, right?
Yes. Yeah. As does his tanning bed.
Why don't we take a break for a minute, and why don't you just have the entire American public just have a little look-see at your list of corporate contributors and your list of, you don't suppose you've, enabled any legislation for any of them?
No, never, no.
You believe how righteous these people get?
Well, and that's the whole thing with Juanita's email and Luke chapter 18 and John Ensign. I haven't done anything legally wrong. It's not like Bill Clinton.
Oh, well.
Because I didn't lie about it under oath. But then again, there's still an open nuance as to whether Bill Clinton did, because there's an open nuance as to whether oral sex is sex. I mean, sexual intercourse has a rather precise definition. That's why the laws surrounding things like that say sexual intercourse or swinging from the chandelier at the Westin Peachtree Plaza naked.
With a lampshade on your head.
Bingo.
The law is extremely specific, actually, in every area of the law. There are the law reduces things down to minutiae, as you are aware. But can you just imagine? I can't even, it's almost impossible for me to, really what it boils down to is it's just hilarious.
Oh, and I've got the answer. I've got the answer for you, Reverbo. I've got the answer.
The movie?
Yes. It is a film by Kevin Willmott. And it is called CSA, The Confederate States of America. Juanita wrote in, as did our new friend Emily in Chattanooga.
Okay, and it's by Brian Willmott?
Kevin Willmott.
Kevin. That's nothing like Brian, is it?
Not even a little bit.
No.
I see that Verizon is still working its magic.
The Confederate States of America. Oh, this is good. I will Google. I will find this. And this has got to be.
It will destroy you. I'm telling you. It's a Bill Hicks strap-in moment. The whole thing is... too much to describe and too spot on.
Oh, if they even produce something, if they even did this half right, it's going to be great.
They did it 100% right. Okay. Think of it, I said it's a mockumentary, and that might send people thinking about, A Mighty Wind or Best in Show or the Spinal Tap. No. Think Ken Burns on acid.
Oh. Say no more. I must find this. So this is stunning psychedelia of the highest level here.
All I can say is you're going to laugh till you hurt, and half the time you're going to wonder why you're not crying.
and the whole thing, you know, it'll be over, and it'll go to that sort of black and white thing with the Indian chief in the middle and the tone, you know, beep, and you're just still going to be sitting there looking at the screen.
It just, I just got this flash. See, I get a vague idea.
Yeah, there he is, David from Maine, Confederate States of America. I called it, I co-signed on this one and debuted it on the horn first, and he absolutely did.
Oh, yeah.
And this is like a year, 2 years ago? Yeah.
Hey, absolutely, you could give credit where credit's due. Imagine this in reverse, and once again, how not funny, of course, the rednecks would do it, and how infantile and juvenile. Let's see, if the North had won, hey, Bubba, the North did win. Oh.
There's certain parts of this country where that is grudgingly admitted. Remember, they did not celebrate the 4th of July in Vicksburg, Mississippi for 100 years.
That is mighty impressive. Well, I'll tell you, you know, where I live, I don't know when this started, but we're glad it did. You are served unsweetened iced tea here almost as a matter of course. So.
Wow.
Or at least they ask. And I don't know how they were dragged kicking and screaming into that, but...
Well, it's the diabetics.
Jesus. I got it. Oh, this, I can't. Will you look at you. You've given your listeners a entertainment after your show's over. Look at this.
We aim to please, Roberto.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, you might be able to get another call in.
I'm hoping... It looks like I have to get six in 12 minutes.
In 12 minutes. What do you mean? You have a quota?
No, I have 12 minutes remaining in the program, and I've got five, and I've got all six lines lit up.
You better get to it.
It drives me batty when people do this to me. I love these conversations, and the phone starts ringing at 8:15, and...
We will talk again.
All right, Reverbo, have a great weekend. Go forth and find that and report back, please.
I shall. And by the way, did you ever see, what was your review of The Magic Christian? We never talked about that.
It's, anything with Peter Sellers in it is almost beyond words.
Okay, so it held up?
It's still there. It is absolutely still there.
Okay, good, because we're going to trade entertainment suggestions. I just want to make sure that
there's some things that don't go away. Now I tell you truthfully, I do have a problem with the fiendish plot of Dr. Fu Manchu, as Peter Sellers movies go.
Okay, well, Sellers was kind of and his whole private life. Have you even delved into that?
Oh, the HBO film about him was poor man.
He's a piece of work. He really thought that Sophia Loren was going to leave Carlo Ponti. And Peter was going to abandon his family, and the two of them were going to, like, go off into the sunset together.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He was brilliant at creating all those characters because there was no baseline human there.
Oh, no. He was insane. But, yes, I miss him. Anyway, all right, take care, and I will we'll catch up soon.
All right. Take care, Reverbo.
Okay, Bob.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
That's our critic at large, Reverbo, and I'm going to march through here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there, is it me?
It is you.
Hi. Well, if you want it, here it is. Come and get it. Make your mind up fast. The Magic Christian. It's fancy free in Arizona.
Yes, it is. I recognize the voice.
But I had a nice morning. I've got to tell you what happened here. The teabaggers decided that they were going to do a stand in front of Representative Gabrielle Giffords' office at 4:00 on Friday afternoon. So a few days ago, three very nice people, Andrea, Ben, and Sarah with an H, all of whom have, you know, sort of attachments to liberal causes here, said, well, you know, let's us have a little demo about 8:00 in the morning in front of her office. That's nice. Maybe we can get 40 or 50 people out there. And they put out the word, and I happened to get it through Move On. And so at 8:00 this morning, in front of Gabrielle Giffords' office, there were like 300 people. And Andrea and Ben and Sarah had put out a table, and they had bagels and water and juice and cut up melon and grapes. It's very lovely sort of setup. What they forgot to put on the table was a jar. And people, and Andrea is a graphic artist, so they had wonderful signs. And there we are standing on the corner, and the city buses are honking at us, and ambulance went by and honked, and fire engine beeped us, and school bus, plus all the other folks, and it was a very pleasant interchange, very positive, people just sort of smiling and talking, and obviously a Friday work day, 8 o'clock in the morning, you're going to have a lot of retired people. But there were young folks, too, and the usual activist dogs on leashes. So at one point they said, well, you know, you can make donations if you want to cover the, because they had sent out for more water and ice. And I was wearing a big straw hat, and I said, hey, use the traditional method. And I took my hat off and started to hand it to Sarah to walk around with, and this man pushed past me to put $20 in the hat. And little Sarah just walked all over the place and came back, and the expenses were recouped, and probably enough left to help stock the next one that's going to be at Raul Grijalva's office on Saturday. But what a pleasant environment. And, of course, it's hot here, and people were kind of pushing each other for a little bit of shade, but what a pleasant event. And these three people who had no, it was just, it reminded me of Mickey Rooney and Judy going, my dad has a barn, let's make a drama.
Exactly.
Let's have a show.
Let's put on a play, gang.
Yeah. And they put out the word on the internet. We had the local meetup folks. We had local move on, of course. We had.
No, that's a beautiful thing.
It was a beautiful thing. And it was just so, and our representative, Gabrielle Giffords, is a blue dog, but she's staying strong for public option. And hooray for her. So I'll get off and let the other five people get the next, five minutes.
All right. Well, I thank you for the activism and thank you for the report.
I just wanted to say I just enjoyed it so much. And it
can be refreshing.
You know, if you see things happening around your community and you can possibly make it, this is a real nice thing to do.
Indeed, okay, indeed.
Bye for the day.
Later, Fancy.
Bye, sweetie.
Bye. Okay. Oh. Wow. Everybody, we all gave up. But that does leave me a couple of minutes to get a couple of emails in that I think are good. Jared wrote in to put a little addendum on Tim Tebow. He said, just FYI, thanks for reading the previous email. Tebow's story is worse than you think, Bob. His dad doesn't welcome ecumenical believers, in other words, Catholics, you know, that sort. Sports Illustrated did a story called You Gotta Love Tim Tebow with his name spelled out with a blood-red Christian T. The scribe that did the piece is a man that thinks his job is that of a stenographer, not a writer, and was born without any sense of irony. You see, the guy that wrote that piece, Marvin Murphy, didn't realize that the following statement from Tebow's daddy is offensive and vulgar. And this is from the article. Now, Bob Tebow has a question of his own. Have you heard the story of Timmy's birth? Even if you have, it's worth hearing from the mouth of his father. When I was out in the mountains in Mindanao, and I was informed that, yeah, it was the Philippines, not Malaysia. When I was out in the mountains of Mindanao back in 86, I was showing a film and preaching that night. I was weeping over the millions of babies being aborted in America, and I prayed, God, if you give me a son, if you give me Timmy, I'll raise him to be a preacher. Not long after, Bob and Pam Tebow conceived their fifth child. It was a very difficult pregnancy. Quote,
The placenta was never properly attached, and there was bleeding from the get-go, Bob recalls. We thought we'd lost him several times. Early in the pregnancy, Pam contracted amoebic dysentery, which briefly put her in a coma. Her doctors, fearful that medications they had given her had damaged the fetus, advised her to abort it. She refused, and on August 14, 1987, Pam delivered a healthy, if somewhat scrawny, Timothy Richard Tebow. All his life, from the moment he could understand, I told him, "You're a miracle, baby," Bob recalls. "God's got a purpose for you, and at some point I think he's going to call you to preach." I asked God for a preacher, and he gave me a quarterback. Jared notes, I guess Marvin didn't know that the following statement is offensive, ignorant, and vulgar. But then again, he probably went to one of those SEC schools that serve as daycare centers for 20-year-olds and thinks that kind of speech is absolutely okay. Jeebus. And in regard to my conversation with Cassie, I got a note from Emily in Chattanooga. She says, check out LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. I'm with them, and they're a law enforcement organization of members who are either supporters or have something to do with law enforcement. They have a website, just Google for them, and they have videos on YouTube with interviews with officers like former undercover NARC agent and U.S. Marshals. They say to legalize all drugs. The law enforcement president of Mexico says the same thing as well. It'd be great if you could interview somebody from their group. They'd probably be happy to, and I need to, especially in light of this article from the Washington Post. This op-ed piece from the 17th of August, It's Time to Legalize Drugs, by Peter Moskus and Stanford Neil Franklin. Well, hallelujah, we got through, even with problems with the interweb tubes. And what a magnificent Friday evening you all did make it. Thank you very kindly. Thank you for the contributions that came in during the program. They help more than possibly you know. It's a constant struggle to keep things going here, but you know that too. If you've never participated in your support of the Horn, there's no better time than now to start. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address for the Horn. And either way works just fine, trust me. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Join me at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Sunday for the Still Moving Mountains, the Journey Home kickoff concert from the Capitol in Charleston, West Virginia. I have a feeling there's going to be some dandy good music there. And I'll even try not to make it too boring as the MC. I'll look forward to hearing from you about that, too. Thanks, of course, as always, to Peter Godbold, to John Fox. Listen in, tune in for John on Sunday night at 9 p.m. with All Foxed Up. Remember, the weekend schedule is on its way, starting tomorrow evening with Rick Smith, followed by Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, and an encore presentation of Billy Shear's Night Sounds. And then on Sunday, the concert, and then All Foxed Up. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They are indeed the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Around with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Daggum freaking interweb tubes, flag stagging, frazzleack and no snot flacking. Yeah. Another interesting day in the wonderful world of internet broadcasting, whose last leg is Verizon. Truly, that communications company could screw up a one-car funeral. I kid you not. But the interweb tubes are working, and I hope they continue to do so, but I will not offer you any guarantees thereof. So let's make the best of the situation while we've got a situation to make the best of. What do you say? It's about 4 minutes past the hour. It's Friday, late summer, August, convection current-driven thunderstorms popping up. Yeah, you might get a little wet, so I'll run on up here onto the front porch. Get onto the eaves of the porch. Sit back, kick your feet up on the rail. Grab a cold one. Don't drink the water! Do not drink the water! You'll understand why I say that in a minute. But it's Friday on the front porch on the horn. Anything is open for conversation. Deadly serious politics, social observations, cultural phenomena, silliness and seriousness, all have their place. Friday on the front porch, on the horn. And as such, I hope you will bring some of that to the table. I said don't drink the water. Why did I say don't drink the water? Well, if you saw the show post for today that News Ninja Susan kindly maintains, you will note that I have been profoundly affected by a little something that I found over at alternet.org. Granted, it did not originate with Alternet. It is from Mother Jones. And Alternet titled it, The Fiji Phenomenon, It's a Human Rights and Environmental Nightmare, So Why Is It the Number One Imported Bottled Water in the U.S.? It's a hell of a headline, really. The subhead is slugged, How Did a Plastic Water Bottle Imported from a Military Dictatorship Thousands of Miles Away Become the Epitome of Cool? And whether you go to Mother Jones or whether you go to Alternet, I highly recommend to you this article by Anna Lenzer. It's stunning when you consider what's being done to the Fijian people over this brand of water.